Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. It is the Parental Sovereignty Radio Show that we do each Tuesday night. And are we going to have a good time tonight? I'll tell you. You know, when we started this show a few months back, as we started to find out what Common Core was and felt there was a need to really address parental sovereignty, we started out with me and Jennifer Montrose and Stacey Tabush and Jennifer Gallegos out here in Oregon. And Jennifer had to leave us. She started doing some homeschooling, and she listened, and she I'm in communication with her. I'm in a group with her for Common Core. And so then it was just the three of us, and I really always kind of hoped for five in this show. I think a five is a really good number to have a really good roundtable discussion. And so we've slowly but surely worked up there. A couple of weeks ago, we had Dan and Rodney called in, and they were guests on the show. And over the last 2 weeks, they decided they'd like to be permanent co-host on this show. Last week, we welcomed in Dan as our new co-host, and this week we're gonna welcome in Rodney Stanhope as our new permanent co-host. Makes it a little bit easier. You know, the night that Dan and Rodney called in, it was just Jennifer and I. And, you know, it kind of makes it hard for a roundtable discussion. That's more like a sitting across the desk from each other discussion. And so we've got a full team going on now, and it's great. If one of us has to take off and not do the show for a week, be on hiatus for a week, makes it a little bit easier. And it also gives us a real good coverage of the country. We've got Jennifer and Stacey are down in Alabama. We've got Dan down in one of my favorite places in Florida, Newport Richey, right up from St. Petersburg, Florida, where I lived a decade ago. Love that area. It's very special to me. I had good memories from there. And then, you know, I've done Conservatives Coast to Coast. That was my first blog talk experience. Started that as Kane Coast to Coast 2.5 years ago, actually. It's been a long time. And I've always been the one out here in California all by myself. And, in fact, a lot of teasing and ribbing's gone on. They call me the left coast out here. I tell them all it's the Reagan coast. And so, but now we've got Rodney Stanhope from the Sacramento area in California. So I don't feel so by myself. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. So we're welcome in Rodney here in a couple of minutes. And let him have a few words and then start our roundtable discussion. This is Contending for Truth Radio. We start with a foundation of faith on this show. Anybody that's listened to any of my blog talk stuff over the last 2.5 years knows that I'm never afraid to mix my politics and my religion. My faith and where I stand and my belief in God and my belief in a creator and my belief in those basic principles. And as we talked last night with John Stevens on politics and religion, those basic principles are what made this country great. You know, it's about how to treat people and how to live a little bit better life and how to overcome difficulties and hurdles. You know, I've always had a hard time with the atheist that has a problem with Christianity. I mean, what's the problem? We know that religion over the years, all different religions have abused religion. But the basic Christian principles made this country great. Our founders believed that. They instilled them into our founding documents. Tonight, we're going to look at where we've come over the last 250 about years since those founding fathers. You know, those founding fathers came over here to escape religious persecution, really. They were being told exactly how they had to worship and what church they had to belong to, and it wasn't really a real good thing. King George, you know, he was a bit of a tyrant. And we came over here and into this great land and started a country. And our history hasn't always been flawless. We've done some things that weren't right and done some things that were wrong. But for the most part, in that 250 years, we've become a great, great nation. And we have provided the world with a better standard of living than the world's ever seen. You know, I was watching some different things that are going on around the world today and looking at different countries, and I saw a couple of malls in a couple of countries that I thought were more of a third world country. We live in such a better world today than we've ever lived. And it's really, really a special place. But a lot of that's come from this great country. It's come from some basic principles that we instill. One of the greatest is our freedom that gives us the entrepreneurial spirit. You know, we've got the ability to do things. You know, I mentioned last night, you know, about Abbott and Costello. You know, who's on first, what's on second, and I don't know who's on third. But, you know, there's something really special that most people don't know about Lou Abbott. Or, no, Lou Costello. He invented the ice machine. Did you know that? Because we've got an entrepreneurial spirit. You know, you go to the store, you go to the grocery store, you go to the shoe store, you go to Walmart, you go to the dollar store, you go to the mall. Every store in the mall that you go into, you will find something Disney. You know, Walter Elias Disney, he had a great entrepreneurial spirit. Some of the things that Disney does today, especially in their program, I believe Mr. Disney himself would roll over in his grave. But you know, Walt Disney was bankrupt four times before he ever created Disneyland. Before he ever did Snow White. Did you know that Walt Disney was responsible for Bugs Bunny? You know, Walt Disney is a great story of entrepreneurial spirit. I want to tell you a real quick story. He went back east. He had started it. It wasn't called Bugs Bunny quite yet. It was just a rabbit, and his name has just slipped me, which is kind of crazy. But he went back east, and in the process, this guy stole the rabbit. He stole Walt Disney's artists. And on the train, as they went back, him and Mrs. Disney got on that train, and Mr. Disney started drawing. Instead of crying in front of his hurdle, he started drawing, and he created a little mouse. And he wrote on the bottom of that first drawing of Mickey Mouse, he wrote Mortimer Mouse. And he showed it to Mrs. Disney. And she looked over at him and shook her head, took the paper and crossed out the name Mortimer and wrote Mickey. Well, I don't have to tell any more of the story, do I? Walt Disney had an entrepreneurial spirit. He lived in a country where he was free to do that. He was free to create, and he was free to do without the hindrance of the state. And from that Mickey Mouse came different things, and it grew and it grew. And like I say, you can't go into any store in the mall and not find something with Walt Disney's signature on it. McDonald's, Sam Croc, you know, he was running around selling blenders. Make milkshakes. And he got this brilliant idea. Well, you know, if I can sell a burger for 25 cents and make a 10 cent profit, that's great. But if I can get 1,000 people selling my burgers and just take a 2 cent profit, that's a whole lot more money. And he created the franchise. He bought McDonald's, and the rest is history. Sam Walton, created a store, a little store, and he had this brilliant idea. He says, why don't we just sell a little bit of everything? If somebody really needs it, we'll sell it. Entrepreneurial spirit. We got the freedom to do that is one of the things that makes our nation great. You know, some of the other things that make our nation great, our Constitution protects us from the federal government. It's at least supposed to. We're seeing one side of our political spectrum trying to erode that, but what a great document. Designed to say, you know, the federal government, here's your job. Stick with it. And let the states do the rest. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican because I believe that when you get a bigger and bigger and bigger government, you have more waste, fraud, and abuse. And when you have a smaller, localized government, you have less. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican because I believe in the sanctity of life. The other side doesn't believe in that. These are just founding principles, though. Basic principles. We talk about our education system a lot. Poor little Frederick Douglass, he wanted to learn how to read. The master said, no, you can't read or it'll ruin you as a slave. And he took a big lemon and made lemonade out of it and said, all right, I found my way out. And he only did because of the founding principles of this country. And yeah, we had to go through a civil war, and it was rough. But how does a little boy that can't read, that is a slave, end up being a business owner? Probably would be on Forbes 500 list if he were today and have the direct ear of the president. It's a great country. But the big elephant in the room on this show is parental sovereignty. I support Joe Carr in Tennessee because Joe Carr believes in sovereignty. He believes in sovereignty. He believes in sovereignty of the state. He believes in local sovereignty. He believes in the sovereignty of the parent. And our parental sovereignty right now is being eroded bit by bit. They'd like to take away the parents' right to decide what to feed their children, what their children can wear, what their children can say, what their children can do. They want to erode the sovereignty of the parent to decide what information gets disseminated out into the world and is used for advertising purposes or even more nefarious. So that's why this show is called Parental Sovereignty Radio. And that's the issues we're going to discuss tonight. We're going to start with a couple of stories. We've been talking about Jared Markham, and I am proud to say, very proud to say, all charges were dropped this last week. We want to thank great patriots like Shannon Wright and Wayne Dupree and many of the other, a bunch of Caniacs, a big, huge shout-out. Thank you so much to Ken Brolin. And all of us that have been sharing the information and a bunch of other people that were on the cane train, because we put the pressure on. And the school found out, no, it is not going to work that a teacher decides to overrun the sovereignty of the parent on what's okay for Jared to wear to school. Or the sovereignty of the school to make its own dress code. See, the teacher itself decided that the sovereignty of the school dress code wasn't enough. If I were that principal, I'd be very upset. Unfortunately, that's not what we see. We see a CYA situation. But all charges have been dropped, and Jared's going to go on. We want a big, big, huge shout-out to Jared's attorney, Ben White. Let me tell you, he led these charges. He took it to the top, and he did great. And now there's going to be, as I understand, another half of the story. There's going to be a lawsuit. I believe we're going to win that too. But just as the dawn turned on Jared Markham's story, Elizabeth Daly's story popped up. You see, Elizabeth had gone to the convenience store to get some bottled water, some frozen cookie dough, and a gallon of ice cream. And some overzealous Alcoholic Beverage Commission authorities that were not in, they were plain clothes, decided that they were going to approach this girl because they thought that it was a six-pack of beer. They thought it was a six-pack of beer. There was no reasonable reason to do anything. I mean, unless you're blind as a bat, I've never seen a six-pack of bottled water look like a six-pack of beer in my life. So if anything else, these guys need to be fired because they don't have the vision capability to do their job. But you see, our Constitution protects us from illegal search and seizure, from all kinds of different things, and they decided to just overrun the Constitution and decide to give her a hassle, and they were a little bit afraid. You see, Elizabeth had just the night before been into a situation where they watched a thing about being safe in the area that certain things could happen, and they drove off, calling 911, making sure that they knew that this was actually really cops. Elizabeth was arrested and thrown in jail for the night. Now, the next day, the charges were dropped because basically the people in the court system said, you know, this is insane. This is absolutely insane. But then the Alcoholic Beverage Commission came out with a statement, and they said, well, if Elizabeth would have just cooperated with the authorities, all of this wouldn't have happened. I can't say they're listening to us tonight. I was going to shoot an email out to them and let them know they were going to be our topic tonight. I did that for Logan Middle School each time we talked. Just in case they listen to the archive, because I really should shoot them an email tomorrow, let me explain something to you guys. If your officers had stood by the Constitution of the United States, this whole thing would not have happened. So that's where we're going to go tonight. That's what we're going to discuss tonight. I'm going to start bringing everybody in, and we're going to start off with Rodney Stanhope, who's in. It looks like everybody's in the room. Rodney, I am so glad to have you as a permanent co-host on this show. I've really enjoyed getting to know you the last year. I knew somewhat of you during the Herman Cain campaign. We were both here in California fighting hard for Herman Cain. We were on that train together, but I really got to know you as you started running for the California vice chair of the GOP. And let me tell you, Rodney, you're a brother from another mother, I'll tell you, because you're outspoken, you say it the way it is, you fight the fight. You understand that we've got to get local on these elections. That's the only way we're going to win minds and hearts. You understand that we've got to get out and teach the people. I'm really excited to have you here. I'm going to pass it to you for opening remarks. And then we'll go to our second newest co-host. I'll let you pass it to Dan. I'll let Dan pass it to Stacy, and I'll let Stacy pass it to Jennifer, and then I'll let Jennifer pass it right back to me. I'll just let everybody take the conversation and run with it where you may. Welcome, Rodney.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here with the four of you, and proud to say thank you for making me a co-host, and I look forward to every Tuesday night discussing what's going on in this country with, you know, straight-up legitimate comments that aren't hidden, painted, or afraid to say it like it is, which is what we all do, you know. Been doing it since the Cain train. And, you know, it's with the kid with the NRA shirt and the lady with the, you know, with the water bottle. As soon as I heard about the water bottle idea, my first thought was Sheriff DeAgostino is going to de-sanction the deputization of the ABC, you know, because they're overzealous. They're going crazy. They don't seem to care about the Constitution they've taken an oath of office to defend anymore. And you've got these administrators in school and stuff that no longer believe that any parent has the right to raise their own children. You know, we're all going to be raised by the state, and your opinion no longer matters, or what you believe in, you know. And we've talked about this before. It takes a parent to raise a child, not a village. And, you know, they can teach whatever they want in school. We can't seem to control that unless we can take over our local school boards, which is why we keep talking go local. You know, I've had people talk for years, Agenda 21, Common Core, constitutional rights, and I keep telling them, go local. We control our school board in here. We got Todd White and Kevin Brown elected to the school board. We got Sheriff DeAgostini. We've got a good board of supervisors. And our sheriff just defunded overzealous National Forest Service, because up here they were gold dredging, because, you know, God forbid, El Dorado County is where Coloma is, Sutter's Mill, where gold was discovered. We have a lot of it up here, and it's kind of expensive now, so it's worth money. So these people out there dredging, trying to make a living. And the EPA comes in and with the Forest Service and tells them, you know, you can't dredge anymore because you're stirring up mercury, which is not true. We've tried to prove to them 1,000 times that dredging is actually removing mercury from the river. So they figured out a way to ban dredging in their county. And now they're realizing that they want a federal grant to dredge the Combahee River because mercury's gone up since they shut dredging out. And this one woman had her own property with access to the river that was hers. And they swooped in, like, with guns drawn and everything to arrest her and fine her for dredging on her own property. And our sheriff said, I don't think so. And they now have no deputized rights in our county to enforce any rules at all. And that was all done because we went local and we worked to elect conservatives that actually do their job and understand the Constitution. And we have what I consider to be the coolest Second Amendment sheriff I've ever met. So it's just, people need to wake up. You know, I keep hearing in California as of yesterday, while I was stuck on the freeway for 5 hours last night, because they shut it down for a fire, you know, gas went up almost 30, it could go up as high as 30 cents a gallon in the next week because of new taxes that Californians voted for because they want to screw the rich Republicans and those terrible oil refinery people, and we don't want to hurt the poor. And I'm like, 30 cents a gallon. You drive your kid to school, you drive them to daycare, you drive yourself to work, you're poor and you keep whining, you're paying more in taxes because you voted for something, you know, to screw that awful oil refinery to make 4 cents a gallon, while the taxes in California are now 72 cents a gallon for taxes. And people still aren't waking up. And I just don't get it. And that's my opening statement. So I look forward to tonight's show, and I pass it to Dan.
Well, thanks a lot, Rodney, and really happy to be here as well. And I'd like to start it off by wishing this nation a happy 237th, and hopefully she'll have another 1,000 more. And on a footnote on that end, I'd also like to pay tribute to two of our founding fathers, John Adams, who on July 4th, 1826, surrounded by his family and friends, muttered his last words. He said that Jefferson lives, closed his eyes, and passed away. Unbeknownst to him, Thomas Jefferson himself had died 2 hours before. And what I find really ironic about that is both of them died on the 50th birthday of our nation. If that doesn't show divine intervention, I don't know what is. As for Jared, I thank God somebody out there has some common sense. I mean, this never should have gotten as far as it went, but overzealous people who have no clue what the heck's going on around here took the law into their own hands, made their own decisions, violated his constitutional rights, and proceeded. And now they have the audacity to try to cover their tracks through a lawsuit. This is ridiculous. What happened to honor and integrity? We need to stand up against this and say, listen, you have no right to do this kind of stuff to our children. Your job is to teach. If you don't like what my child wears, you bring it to me, not to the police. When I was a child, if something, any kind of incident happened that the teacher didn't agree with and could not handle in the classroom herself or himself, we were sent to the principal's office. And we sat there and we shivered and scared, and we knew that, you know, we'd get detention and it was handled through the school system, and that was it. In my whole 12 years in the parochial school system, I never once saw the police come other than a fire alarm or a bomb scare that some kid would call in, you know, once or twice a year. Nothing really came of it. You know, everybody had a laugh. We went back in and everything was fine. And now we're calling the police on everything? Come on, people, wake up. And then look at, you know, poor Elizabeth. you know, this poor girl goes out to, you know, hey, listen, I'm just as guilty as her. I love my bottled water. And I go in there all the time. You know, and I come out with my ice cream. You know, I have my favorite ice cream, and, you know, I'm looking forward to going home, and I'll walk up to my car and jump in. If I saw a bunch of people running at me, first thing I'd do is jump in the heck in my car, start it, and get the heck out of Dodge. These were not uniformed police officers. And we know for a fact that there's several instances that have happened around this country where people have been pulled over supposedly by a police officer, then been shot and killed and raped. This, she reacted, she did the exact right thing. She called 911. She told them what was happening, and there was no reason the police had to pull her over. Every law enforcement agent in this country, from the town sheriff right on through the attorney general, has to take an oath. And it begins with, do you promise to uphold the laws of the Constitution? Every single one of them. The first clause is to uphold our Constitution. Seems that people forgot that. We have something called the Bill of Rights. There's 10 primary ones we began with, and these are our foundation. We were built as a country under God, and it's why if we go to Washington, D.C., and we look around, God's mentioned everywhere. For the atheist, sorry, this is a fact. You have to accept that the majority of the people here are Christian, and, you know, our foundation, our moralities, everything is based on our belief in God. We have lost that. And, you know, the opposition blames everything else. You know, they say because of God, you know, we're in this incident. No, we aren't. We're here because people have turned their backs. Parents don't teach their children anymore the moralities. They don't bring them to church as often. You know, when I was a child, everybody went to, you know, church, whether you're Protestant, Presbyterian, Catholic, whatever, Jewish, you know, all of the faiths, we all went to our various houses of worship, and that was the way it was. The family unit was the focal point. It all started with the family, and then it went to, you know, the community and the schools, and we had peace and harmony, and everything worked very, very well together. Yeah, we had our share of problems in the 60s. We had a major change going on. We lost three very important people. You know, for the first time in, you know, 100 years, we had an assassination of a president. Then we had a leading contender for the presidency assassinated, and one of our great Republican leaders in the Equal Rights Movement was also assassinated. A lot of people died, you know, standing up for our nation and standing up for the beliefs. But the fundamental principle was we were all behind the country, and whether we were on one side or the other, the fact remained is we all had that common purpose. We all believed in our country. We all stood under the flag together. Today, we can't say that. We have one group moving far to one side and another group going far to the other, both calling each other's names, and there's a cavern in the middle. We have an administration that's trying to promote that, and we're falling apart. I became involved also during the Cheney campaign. I was on a Facebook page that supported Herman Cain. And I have been pretty much arguing politics since the Nixon-McGovern race in 69. So this is nothing new for me. It's just the venue I'm choosing to use nowadays. Back in 69, obviously, we didn't have computers. But I've been arguing, I've been involved in politics all my life to some degree or another. I've taken an active role recently in the last 5 years because I am fed up with where we're going. I'm fed up with, you know, the lies. Last week, Scott brought up a wonderful idea by saying that, you know, maybe we should just return to our foundation, and rather than arguing these given points, why don't we educate the people really what the Republican Party is? You know, we have a wonderful, wonderful heritage, beginning with, you know, we started as nothing, as part of the abolitionist movement. We migrated out of that, and we formed, you know, with the help of greats like Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln, when we created a party that stood for principles that we all believed in. And, you know, over the last 150 years, this party has done incredible things. But all of a sudden, 50 years ago, the other side starts laying claim to all the accomplishments we made. And we just sat there and allowed that to happen. Now, on their website, they're claiming 200 years of supporting equal rights and other nonsense that, you know, is based on a fallacy. You know, we have one big, big tool that we can use that none of us seem to be using. It's called the National Archives, the Library of Congress, and the Federalist Papers. All three, we can produce concrete evidence supporting every claim we make, something that is undeniable. And rather than participating in an argument, my proposition is, listen, just say, okay, here's my side, here's my proof, show me yours. And when they try to change the subject, say, no, I'm sorry, show me your proof to what you're claiming. Because we have the truth on our side. Why don't we use it and show everybody who and why we are Republicans? We aren't all rich people. You know, the other administration got most of its money from Wall Street. You know, they claim the oil companies are running the country. Fact is, the oil companies don't have one lobbyist in Washington. That's a fact. You know, and, you know, they're tearing the coal industry apart. They're going to leave towns in Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, totally without a means of supporting themselves. Tens of thousands of people are going to be unemployed. Why? Because of a fallacy. They call it climate change now, when every single credible scientist out there says there's no premise to global warming. And yet we let them get away with this. We're starting to call them up on it, but we need to act now. We need to start today. We actually needed to start yesterday, but we need to continue on with the fight and never say stop. We need to educate. We need to start with our children. Tell the schools, no, we aren't going to accept this anymore. Parents need to get very involved with what's going on now. As a grandparent, I have a child, a granddaughter, who is entering first grade next year. And I am terrified at what is going to be fed to her. So, yeah, I have a vested interest as well. And that finishes up my end, and I'd like to pass it over to Stacy. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. I am more troubled by this story about the student in Virginia than I have been about any story in a while, because as a parent, it troubles me when I'm conflicted on how to raise my child, because I was raised to respect authority, to respect the police, to respect people who held positions, and even if you didn't respect the person, you respect the position and you respond politely. But in the society that seems to be getting out of hand on an hourly basis now, I cannot, you know, tell my daughter to do what a man in street clothes tells her to do late at night on a college campus. That's just nonsense for them to be arguing that two girls out alone, I'm assuming, you know, unarmed and no way to protect themselves, should do what a man says to do because he flashes a metal badge. It's just appalling. I would never, ever, ever tell my daughter to do something. And I know, even here raising three kids, that if my dad knew that I didn't get in my car and drive away, that he would be disappointed in me, because that's not how I was raised. So we're stuck in this position as parents to try to figure out how to teach our kids to respect authority and be polite, and at the same time look out for themselves and their safety. But how do we teach them how to balance those two in a society where agents seem to be going rogue and doing things like this, and the people who are over them, their supervisors and the government, take their side instead of the girl's side? And we live in a country where everything is this war on women. It's all about this fight for women's rights and women's freedom and women's health and women's safety. Yet here we see a situation where these girls could have been assaulted by two men pretending to own a badge. And it's like Rodney said, they did exactly as they should have done, exactly as they should have done. And the government, who claims to be all for the women, should be applauding them for knowing how to react to a situation like that. And instead, they're patting the backs of these ABC agents, which I'm not going to lie to you, I didn't know existed until I read this story. And that's a little terrifying, too, because I apparently don't know all the different types of badges there are out there. So if I were to ask someone to see their badge, I wouldn't know if it were legitimate because of this administration and past administrations growing their new army or whatever they're doing. It's just terrifying to me. Jennifer?
Hey, welcome, everyone. I was trying to get everything squared away with our current new special guest that we have coming in. We have someone that was at the Jared Markham rally recently in West Virginia, boots on the ground, fighting for liberty, for Second Amendment rights, for First Amendment rights, fighting for parental sovereignty, and telling it like it is, telling the truth, letting it be known that we as Americans are not going to stand for this. It was ridiculous that Jared Markham had what happened to him, you know, and over an NRA T-shirt. But we have some really good positive news, and I would like to, at this moment, welcome in Wayne Dupree, News Ninja 2012. Liberal Slayer, and a great advocate for constitutional, you know, principles, and he is just every day exposing the truth and debunking all of the liberal left lies that have been exposed, especially the one that Dan was talking about on the website. Wayne, would you like to give us a report about how the rally went?
Good gracious. Now, how am I going to come behind all that wonderful introduction? How is everybody doing tonight?
Good to have you.
Thank you. So, I was down in West Virginia this weekend, or late last week, and had a tremendous time. Let me tell you something to all those that are listening right now. When you hear liberals say that white people are racist, go to the white people and find out for yourself. When you hear that people are racist in West Virginia, go to West Virginia and find out for yourself. Because West Virginia did me proud. I mean, they welcomed me with open arms, especially around a time when things were not all that great, especially with the First Amendment and Second Amendment violations that were happening against the 14-year-old Jared Markham. So, I mean, I was happy to be there to cover it because I believed in the young man. I believed that he had the right to wear whatever he wanted to. Excuse me. And on top of that, because as you know, he was suspended earlier in the year, and then they let him back in school. So when school was out, they decided, well, now we're going to prosecute him because of what he said to the cops while they were trying to arrest him. But the town of Logan, West Virginia, they stood up. They stood up together as a unit, and their sign of or their show of community force helped with the outcome of the charges being dropped just a few hours before the rally. So I have to give it to that small town. That small town reminded me of a town that I grew up in. And small towns do it. Small towns do it for this nation.
They do, Wayne. And, you know, I want a big welcome you here. I'm a huge fan of yours. And I'm listening to your videos. But I'm going to tell you something. When I share your stuff, if you'll ever notice, most of the time if I'm going to share your website, I use your About page because I find your story fascinating. You know, you're not a guy that I grew up in a very conservative home. I grew up with a grandmother who taught me conservative politics from the time I was 12 years old. In high school and in junior high, I idolized Ronald Reagan and those basic principles that he stood for. You were not raised a conservative. You sat down and looked at life and went, okay, we've got side A and side B, and side A sucks.
Yep. That's right.
You're lying
to
me. And I love your story. I really do. I have a huge amount of respect for you because of where you came from. And then the road that you chose to go down is not an easy road. You have been called names. You've been they want to do everything in the book. And I really appreciate your story. And I would love it if you would just share a little bit about your background for our listeners, who you are. And we're going to make sure that we get everybody to go into News Ninja 2012. You know, there's some great news on his site. He's got some great videos. I love your videos from your car. I love technology. I do this from iPhone, and I was just walking around in the pool a while ago doing a show from the pool. You know, it's a great technology, and I just want to hand it back to you a little bit and tell us a little bit about your history, especially the last few years, and Andrew Breitbart and the impact that he had on you.
Well, first off, don't mess up your phone in the pool. No, but I was born, I was raised by a pastor and a Sunday school superintendent. I was in church maybe 8 or 9 days out of a week. That upbringing was in a household that voted Democrat. When I was growing up, Ronald Reagan was Antichrist. George, well, and actually, to tell you the truth, let me be fair. My parents never said that. That was just stuff that I heard in the community. My mom and my father was very active in the civil rights movement back in the 60s in Cambridge, Maryland, where actually there's a book on Amazon.com called The War on Race Street. And blacks and whites, actually, Race Street was one side was black, one side was white. They had gotten to the point where everything had just popped off and they were burning down the city. Spiros T. Agnew had a role in that, calming things down, which helped him become vice president of the United States a little bit later. And again, that all that is in the book. But my father was big on speaking, and my mom was also big on speaking, especially as Sunday school superintendent. So bring it on up to today. In 2008, I was going to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's, I mean, I didn't like Bush. I didn't support Bush. I didn't vote for Bush. And I felt at the time Bush stole the election away from Al Gore at the time. So that's where I was. Barack Obama had just won Iowa. And I was like, okay, well, I'm still not going to vote for him because I don't know anything about him. And then up in New Hampshire, the media took charge of something that Bill Clinton said, that this was the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen in my life. And when he said that, the media took him at his, well, not took him at his word, but basically said, Bill Clinton is saying that a black man can't be president, when he didn't say that. And I was angry. I was like, wait a minute. They are selling Bill Clinton's name using racist tone to promote Barack Obama. And I was like, that's not the way to win elections. So going into South Carolina, what happened was the media, the black leaders, Congressional Black Caucus, whatever leader that they had down there in South Carolina, they swung Barack Obama and they swung South Carolina to Barack Obama, and basically Barack Obama ran the South. I was like, this is not a way to run a campaign. And I started listening to Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin a little bit more. And let me tell the audience out there tonight. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin are not racist. No matter what you hear on the mainstream media, they are not. They don't push racist talk. Just because they have their interpretation of what is going on in today's time, 9 times out of 10, you can match up whatever they say to what's happening in the media. And the media doesn't like to be called out, so they're going to attack the person that is speaking. So I stepped back because I didn't want to be associated with a party that was electing a black man based on racist tone. And the more I stepped back, the more I started looking at both of the party platforms. I looked at the Republican platform. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm against abortion. I'm against same-sex marriage. I'm against, and I'm for school choice. I mean, I have children. I am for school choice. So, I was able to make my decision off of that based on my upbringing. And that has carried me along to today.
And you're a patriot, Wayne. I'm going to tell you, I'm a firm believer that part of the problem with the black community, especially in my lifetime, is they've always thought they had to have a leader to follow
Jesse.
That's
it, too. That's it, too.
And the black community doesn't need leaders. They need examples. they need examples. And there are some wonderful, I'll tell you, if I started listing all of them, I'd be in trouble because I'd leave some out. But you, Wayne, Kate Carl, C.L. Bryant, all of these black activists in the black community mm-hmm. trying to help get the message out. You guys aren't trying to be leaders. You're trying to be examples and to share
exactly.
information and to educate. And that's what this is all supposed to be about. Because I don't care what color you are. I don't care if you showed up at my house pink and purple polka dots. I get so angry at being called a racist because I disagreed with Bill Clinton. I disagree with Nancy Pelosi. And I disagree with Barack Obama. And I agree with you. I agree especially with Herman Cain. I believe in an ideology. It has nothing to do with the color of the skin. And to be called that when there's not even a fraction of that in my heart is, well, you know, Socrates said it this way. He said, when the debate is lost, slander becomes the tool of the user. Loser.
Exactly.
And when they ad hominem attacks, it just tells me they don't have anything to say. And that's what we've got to start throwing back at them. We've got to start, you know, I use the word ad hominem a lot in my debates when I debate somebody that's on the other side. Because that's what this is all about. I want to pass it back around our roundtable. Wayne, I want you to stay with us all evening, if you can. And we'll just throw you into the roundtable each time after Jennifer. Let's everybody kind of quicken our remarks a little bit because we got six of us. Now, and try and keep it short, see how many times we get around this round table. Or if Rodney or Dan or somebody, you've got a question for Wayne, feel free to throw that in and dialogue back and forth. I'm going to sit back a little bit, and I'm going to wait and let everybody talk, and then I'll come back as soon as it comes back around to you. We'll go to Rodney and to Dan and to Stacy and to Jennifer and pass it back to Wayne, unless, of course, somebody's got a question, feel free to throw it in. This is Continuing for Truth Radio. This is the Parental Sovereignty Show. If you're listening in and you want to join the discussion, feel free to call us at, 347-205-9620. That's 347-205-9620. And I'll pass it back to you, Rodney, out here in California.
Hey, how you doing? Man, I love hearing from Mr. Dupree. That's awesome. I was just going to make a quick add-on to what you guys talked about earlier because both Scott and Dan mentioned being Christian and Christian beliefs. And it's funny because we keep getting attacked. You know, up here we had Todd White for the school board, and he mentioned the word God as part of the creation of our founding fathers, inception of the United States, in a graduation ceremony. And a couple people in our paper had a tizzy fit because he said God. And it's like, it reminds me of a friend of mine made a post on Facebook, and this is actually one of my liberal friends. They said after the Prop 8 thing came down, he goes, let me make it very clear. I'm straight. I'm a liberal. I support your right to be a homosexual. I don't get in the middle of it. But I'm sick and tired of hearing, oh, you're straight, I can make you gay. Because I've never said, I'm straight, I can make you straight. You do your thing, I do mine. Stay out of my life and quit trying to force your stuff down my throat. I don't know any Christian that's running around saying, I'm Christian, I'm going to control you. But there's 1,000 liberals out there that try and beat us up because as soon as you mention God, we're violating the separation of church and state. And it's like, in no way have you ever done that. I seriously doubt, Scott, you have ever gone around going, either I hate you because you're not Christian like me, or I hate you because you won't listen to me. It's not in our nature. And you try and bring up the Constitution, the Pledge of Allegiance, you try and pray, or you mention God, or if you don't like Barack Obama, you're a racist, you're trying to implement religion. They got 1,000 arguments, and Mr. Dupree's right. When you're losing, make stuff up, or just go on the attack because you know you can't win. So, and now pass it on to Dan.
Thanks, Rodney. And Wayne, it's a pleasure to meet you. I've
pleasure to meet you,
Dan, years for a long time. So looking forward to getting to know you better. And I'd like to add on to what you were saying. Obviously, you know, we're all formed, you know, creations of what our how we are raised, and I, thank God, was raised about 3/4 of a mile off the University of Rhode Island campus, and as a result, we had a menagerie of people. from all races, from all corners of the earth, and their children went to my school. So, you know, racism didn't make any sense to me because we all got along great. I mean, everybody, you know, color was nothing. I mean, it meant zero to us. Why? Because that's the way it was, you know. And so, I, you know, being from my background, it baffles me and still does. I don't understand it, you know. I've lived in the Caribbean, you know, where the vast majority of the people living down there, you know, are black and got along fine with everybody. I've been all over the place where, you know, I treat people as people. I judge for what's in the heart. And then, you know, I'll make my conclusion whether I like you or not, and that's it. You know, now I'm down here in Florida, and I heard of a murder trial, you know, a murder investigation out in just outside of Orlando, not all that far from here, and Scott can tell you that. And, you know, it was just, you know, another case, and they said, all the evidence says, you know, we aren't going to prosecute this, and they let it go. All of a sudden, we hear on the news that Eric Holder calls the DA in Orlando and demands a reinvestigation. Then all of a sudden, the chief of police is fired, the lead investigator is demoted, the DA presses charges, and it just went from there, you know. Then they went from a real picture, present-day picture of Trayvon Martin, and they replaced it with a picture of him when he was 12 years old. Now, I don't know about any of you, but, you know, between 12 and 17, there were a lot of changes in my life. You know, 12 years old, I didn't shave. 12 years old, I was pre-puberty. You go through puberty and you come from a child to an adult. So there's no correlation between those two photos. And this was nothing but an attempt to create a racial rift, and it drives me nuts. So to make sure I am informed, I've been watching this trial. It's been on the local news every day, gavel to gavel. So I'm not missing an ounce of it. And the prosecution is laying its case out, and every person here locally says it sounds more like the defense than the prosecution because there is no case here. The case was created in Washington, orchestrated by Washington, and is carried out for one purpose, to divide our nation. And I am, for one, furious with this. This should not be allowed. We had our problems. I'm not saying we didn't. I am, you know, cognizant of all of that. But one thing I can say for sure is from when I grew up, back in the 60s, it's night and day. There's no nothing in common. You know, we gather now as a nation, and I can happily say that I have friends all colors. You know, I look at, you know, people like you, Wayne, I say, you have a better tan than I do. And that's it, because that's all it is. It's skin pigmentation. How deep is it? About a 16th of an inch. You know, and what is inside is what counts. And I can call you a friend because of who you are and what you stand for. And to be honest, I am proud to have met you, and you are a prime, perfect example of a person who finally started questioning what they were raised and how, you know, they were raised, and started questioning affiliations. I question affiliations all the time, and I'm not happy with the rhinos and what's going on with the Republican Party. But you know something? I believe in the foundation of it. And when I compare the Democratic Party to the Republican Party, I look at it from, you know, I don't take it from face value. I look at it. I did exactly what you do, what you did. And you know something? We can turn around and we can look and say, you know, what makes sense? God, country, our Constitution, and the rest of us, you know something? I don't view you as black. I don't view me as white. I don't believe somebody from Korea is Korean. I view us as Americans. We all stand under the stars and stripes. And
that's right.
You know, I want to pass it over to Stacey now. Thanks.
Mr. Dupree, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for joining our discussion tonight. Mm-hmm. I find your story so fun. My dad is my hero. I'm an only child and a little girl still, but he is a Democrat, a Union Railroad Democrat. And your story is what turned him as well. The time during the primaries when the Democrats changed their rules and took the votes from Hillary and gave them to Obama turned my blue-blooded Democratic daddy off.
Mm-hmm,
and he was done. He was done. But so I really enjoy your story because I've watched it firsthand, and it's to watch somebody go from being so – now, I am so hardcore conservative. I don't know how I turned out so far right to be raised by a Democrat, but I had a fair dad who – taught me to learn on my own instead of trying to tell me what to believe. But anyhow, I wanted to touch on something about race also because I'll just share just a tiny bit of who I am. I'm a 28-year-old single mom. I live in Birmingham, Alabama, like 20 minutes from 16th Street Baptist Church, so it's real here, you know. And I am so sick and tired of hearing 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old men of all colors talk about how we need to stop looking at race. Because
right.
Here in my 20s, I legitimately don't. And I've never lived in an era where it was an issue. And so here I am raising children and find myself in this weird position because I want to teach my children that race is not an issue, that we're all different inside and out and all that. But I was a military wife quite some time, and I raised my children for about 6 years up in the smack middle of Missouri where you would see a Hispanic or a black person once a month maybe. And when I got divorced and moved back to Alabama and started my five-year-old in kindergarten in a school that was 85% black, and not only did she never have books, she wasn't accustomed to being around them. And so she would come home talking about all the friends that she had made and how her brown friend was doing this. And so I had to sit down and talk to her about appropriate terms to use so as not to offend her friend or her friend's parents. And I was really conflicted because here I am as a mother and as a conservative, as a Christian, telling myself we don't need to be discussing these things because with generations, this is going to go away, I believe, in my heart. But so where is the line? This is my question to you. Where is the line between respecting someone and what they're offended by, and coming to terms with the fact that we, in this generation, and especially those younger than us, just don't see it like people who lived it. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And you know what? When I look at those lines, and I want you to take this exactly how it comes out. When I look at those lines, first thing first, you have to erase those lines to make change. Because as long as those lines are up, those lines create walls. And when the walls go up, then people, you can't talk through a wall. You can't see through a wall. You can't communicate through a wall. So, I mean, you have to erase those lines. Once you erase those lines, and you know what, on the other side, you might not have anybody. I mean, you might have somebody that's on the other side that is not receptive to what you have to say. Guess what? Leave them alone. Go somewhere else. You can't convert everybody. You can't change everybody. Everybody's not good. You remember now, liberal voters, most liberal voters, especially minorities, have been hoodwinked, led astray for the last 50-plus years. So since facts are on our side as conservatives, we have facts. Republicans have facts. Our problem is the Republicans on top don't want to talk about them, but we have facts on our side.
Mm-hmm.
It's plain and simple, but again, if we use those facts during discussions and others don't want to listen, then we just move on. We can't change everybody. It's not up to us to change everybody. All we have to do is keep on talking the message. Be respectful. Keep on talking the message. Smile when they start really going off. Smile. Smile and walk on. Well, you know what? Thank you for so much for your time. God bless. Take care.
Great.
I kind of felt like you were going to say that, and I'm so glad you did, because I realized in that moment, which was more than 3 years ago, that is very similar in my head to how we as conservatives could be approaching this issue that I feel like Washington is getting so wrong, like with the immigration problems and just everything being about reaching a demographic instead of an idea. In the way that I approached my children in dealing with it seems soft and understandable, and I don't think it takes much more than that as a conservative either.
How old are your children again?
Oh, 4, 6, and 8.
Okay, you know what? I have said this, and I know some other black conservatives that agree with me. If we want to change America, we have to start with our children 10 years and under. And I really believe that, because when you look at the generations that are out there right now, I'm talking about 11 and up. These are the individuals that are on Twitter. These are the individuals that are on Facebook. These are the kids that were telling Mitt Romney, if he becomes president, he needs to be killed or assassinated. They have bought, or they have been bought into the system of hatred by the low information generation. 10 years and younger, my father always told me, you want to set a child in the way he should go, you have up until the age of 10 or 11, actually, to plant that seed in there. Once they get to a certain age, they're not going to learn anything else. So give them the history. Give them the true history of the Republican Party. Republican Party stood for, stood against slavery. They stood up for women. They passed legislation to free the, not only free the slaves, but end segregation. Republicans did that. Abolitionists. The Republican history is so rich. It's just that the individuals on top just don't think it's good business to talk about it.
Jennifer.
Well, I will tell you, there's something to be said for interacting and impacting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always, you know, trying to live by example. you know, with my 11-year-old. And I will agree with you. You know, I don't make certain things a big deal with him, you know, and but you know, I think that what I have seen for years is that people have been told a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I live in a community that if you don't support Alabama Crimson Tide football, you know, because I live right, you know, like 7 miles from the stadium, from the campus, you know, and so it's like in our blood here. So if you live in this community and you support Auburn, Alabama football, then you're like totally on the outskirts and they just really, you know, blow you off and stuff. And so so I'm looking at it from the sports perspective, I guess. So there's a lot of, you know, we have that issue here. And so there's just people that are generation after generation after generation, because my parents went to this school, you know, we all grew up here, you know, and heaven forbid if you support anything else. Well, you know, but what about this society that the Republican Party was about in the beginning of its conception, about free thinking, being free thinkers, having the right to own your own thoughts and mind, you know, coming from a man who didn't even have the right to own his own body, that grew up as a child in a free country, was brought to America and brought and put into slavery. And his mama was real adamant about him not forgetting his past. She wanted her son to know where he came from, that he was once a free man. He was once a free child. And there was something that was in him as a child that he remembered that his mama had taught him. And he had this yearning to want to learn. He wanted to learn beyond his means of what was in front of him. You know, and I have always thought that, you know, my child, I want him to be a free thinker. Just because I tell him, you know, that this is, I want him, you know, something, I want him to be able to experience it for himself, you know, and that's one of the reasons that I am so opposed to Common Core standards in big government, in schools. Because I just, you know, if we allow the big government, if we allow that big eye to take control,
mm-hmm.
we're going to end up in dealing with the same mentality of a nation that we had when Hitler was alive.
Right.
And people look at me and they say that I'm being a conspiracy theorist, you know, but I mean, I look today when I look at the cartoons, and we weren't too far gone from the day when we were listening to Schoolhouse Rock on Saturday mornings, and how I learned the preamble was through singing the song on Saturday mornings, you know, and it's like now things have so turned upside down, you know when. Oh, this so ticks me off when I saw that Lady Gaga was saying the national anthem and changed the wording around. And I'm like, our forefathers are rolling over in their grave. And how many of our servicemen, people that have the right, you know, I mean, talk about our constitutional values. And the things that our forefathers fought for, the reason that those people were in that little church praying and praying and praying, that the people, that the British that were coming, that their ships would sink. I mean, just all that stuff. And how can we treat that like it's nothing? I mean, when I hear, you know, our current, you know, commander-in-chief talking about, you know, this is, the Constitution is just a historical document. You know, it's a living, breathing document to me. And I think it's very valuable that our kids learn every one of those, you know, First Amendment, Second Amendment, you know, all the way down. I think it's very important. Unless we want to find ourselves as a nation on the slave plantation. I mean, we're not far from it now. I mean, you know, with government entitlements and, you know, with so many people, I tell my son, I said, you don't get an allowance at my house, you get commission, because I want him to understand the value of what he's working for. You know, if I just constantly keep giving him and giving him, he's never going to learn the value of anything, the worth of anything, you know. And we've talked about this so many times. I mean, Stacey's mentioned this too. You know, children need to understand right from wrong, and they need to have consequences, okay? They need to understand how it feels to win and lose. But with Common Core standards, you don't have that opportunity. It takes all that off the table because we don't want to offend anyone, you know? It's time that we stop the race baiting. I believe that we as a nation need to not march to remember civil rights, but we need to march for national healing. Because if we keep the wounds open, we're never going to heal from anything. I don't think that we should forget those things that have happened. You know, the reality, I think we can learn from that. I think it's a part of history that does not need to be ignored. But if we continuously, you know, keep that dialogue open and buy into the race baiting and the race hating and stuff that, and the left are so great at trying to portray themselves as being the victims, you know, and we even have the pro-life, you know, this 22 weeks, you know, stuff and you can't even call a baby, it has to be called a fetus just for you to be able to. I don't get that either. You know, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck, you know? And I don't care if it's inside the tummy or outside the tummy. It looks like a baby to me, you know? And, you know, but there's just, I get real fired up. I think it's time that we in this nation, we need to wake up. You know, we're dealing with immigration right now. There's going to be a rally in D.C. on the 15th of July. You know, a lot going on. And every day I keep getting word from someone that we've had another speaker added. The Christian Coalition is coming on board now. You know, people are starting to wake up. The depression that people were in 2012 seems to be, hopefully slowly, you know, people are starting to come out of their coma and realizing that our nation is at stake here, that our parental sovereignty rights, our freedom is at stake here. You know, if we don't take action, that's one of the things that I loved about Frederick Douglass. I speak about him often. Big fan. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican too. He politically agitated. He went to great lengths to even though he was living on the plantation for a while, he took advantage of while he was there. He took advantage of every opportunity he could to learn something beyond what he already knew, whether reading, you know, bribing the kids with bread, to be able to, you know, learn their homework, you know, and he just always had this yearning to want to learn more and to be able to do more. And he knew that there was more beyond the plantation, you know. And if we get in this comfortable place where there's always going to be somebody out there taking care of me and I don't have to do anything for myself, you know, there's no incentive, then the next thing you know, we're going to be, you know, just puppets doing whatever the dictator tells us to do, you know, in order to keep us, you know, plump and fat on the plantation and yes, ma'am, and no, sir, you know, and I want the opportunity to be able to have my own wealth if I want to. I want the opportunity for my son, if he chooses to go to college, I want him to have that choice. But, you know, I don't want somebody else dictating to me and my child. You know, I'm the parent here, not the government. I don't think that for a minute that the government should have stepped in, you know, when it comes to the Marriage Act and stuff. That was just so wrong, you know. But, I mean, I have to look at, when I watch SpongeBob on TV, it looks harmless. If you look at the picture, it looks harmless. But if you really, without even looking at the screen, listen to the words and what's being said, it's horrible. You know, I mean, the values, what we see on TV now, even on the Disney Channel, you know, I don't remember growing up and having a 10-year-old of the same sex approaching another 10-year-old on a television show, you know, asking them out on a date. That stuff was not, you know, stuff that was talked about publicly like that. And, you know, and I just believe that we as a nation, we have got to get back. You know, there are just some things, there are just principles that I believe in. You know, respect for the Constitution, respect for life, belief in limited government, belief in individual personal responsibility. Those four core values that I totally believe in, I think we have lost our way somewhere. And I think we need to start talking about those, whether you're Republican or Democrat. I think if we can get back to the basics, you know, that will be a start for us to get back on the right track. I think that the minute that we chose, because you know, it takes all of us in this nation that go out and vote. And there are some people that just seem to have gotten comfortable and not wanting to know anything except for who's number one on American Idol. You know, it's you know, it's not until you know, after all this has been taken over by the socialists, you know, by, you know, the communists, once we've totally lost our freedom, and then everybody's going to look around and shake their head and wonder what happened. You know, I mean, that's what happened in Poland. You know, when you look at the history and you read the history of what happened with the Holocaust, it's like one day people woke up, they heard this man telling all these great things about what he was going to do for this wonderful country of theirs, and then he got voted into office, and the nightmare began, and it was like a domino effect. And people walked around and smelled that stench, and it didn't even blink an eye, you know, and I don't want that for my country. I did not, you know, I was not given a, I just think we just need to, we got to wake up. And we need more Wayne Dupree's out there. We need more Scott Osborne's and Stacey's and Rodney's and Dan. We need all these people to do more. I mean, there's just like 1% of the population in every state that is really actively engaging. And, you know, I think we've gotten into and it's all electronic internet society. You know, how many of our kids are actually getting outside and playing in the yard and doing those things that before we had internet, you know, taking time out to play board games, really interacting with our children, you know, and taking the time out to do those things that help to inspire. I mean, the 10-year-olds today understand that living in the United States, you have so much opportunity that if you really wanted to be an astronaut, it's not that far-fetched of an idea. I mean, if you want to be a doctor, I mean, you know, I look at people like Ben Carson, who, you know, the where he grew up, and, you know, you look back at the history of Douglas, who was a slave, a runaway slave at that. He didn't even have the right to own his own body, you know. He became an advisor to 5 U.S. presidents, owned 3, you know, newspaper companies. I mean, you know, he was a 47%er in the beginning, and he became a 1%er before, you know, at the end of his life. So we live in a nation that you know, so that we have a land of opportunity, but it's going to be taken away from us if we don't wake up. So anybody that lives anywhere near the Washington, D.C. area, or anyone that can afford to, there's buses. If you can go online, there's buses that are going to the rally from all, I mean, even as far as New Orleans, from what I understand. So I know there's even a bus from Alabama going to D.C., but there's, you know, I think that squeaky wheel gets the grease if we make enough noise, if we say enough is enough, I'm not taking it anymore, you know, political agitation, you know, we're just going to have to do whatever it takes, you know, and because we've got babies that don't have a voice that are being killed every day, you know, and now with our current health care, you know, if you're 80 years old and you got health problems, you know, from what I understand with the health care bill, for those that can read it and understand it, you know, that after a certain age, life is just not worth anything, you know, and I just, you know, we've got to do whatever we need to do. Scott, I'm going to turn it back to you.
I want to take a little bit of editorial privilege with my brother from another great-great-great-grandmother. His name was William Lloyd Garrison. He was the editor of the abolitionist paper, The Liberator. And, Stacy, I think you'll appreciate this. On the subject of jumping hurdles, I do not wish to think or speak or write with moderation. No. No, tell a man whose house is on fire to give a moderate alarm, or tell a man to moderately rescue his wife from the hands of the ravisher. Tell the mother to gradually extricate her babe from the fire into which it has fallen. But urge me to use moderation in the cause like the present? I will not equivocate. I am in earnest. I will not equivocate. I will not retreat a single inch. And I will be heard. And I want to talk about hurdles for a second. Imagine that. Anybody, Wayne, that's listened to me for the last two and a half years at all has heard me use the word hurdle probably more than any other word in the English language. And I'm going to make a very politically correct, incorrect statement right now. I appreciate bigotry. Wayne, you faced at some point on individual level some kind of bigotry because of your color, your skin, or maybe because of your belief. I've faced bigotry because of my Christian belief. I've faced bigotry because I'm a conservative. Dan felt that. Rodney's faced some bigotry because he was the better candidate to run for the vice chair position. But, you know, I'm going to take it right back to the Bible, and I'm going to take it right back to the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians, and he had a thorn in his flesh, and he doesn't exactly say what that is. It could have been physical, it could have been spiritual. I think he doesn't say what it is so that it can apply to all of us. But he asked three times for that to be removed, and Christ said, no, my grace is sufficient. And I appreciate bigotry. Because it is without being abused by other people where we have to jump over that hurdle. That's where we gain our strength. Our schools went from teaching sticks and stones may break my bones to, but words will never hurt me, to sticks and stones will break my bones and names hurt everybody. So you can't say anything that's going to hurt anybody's feelings. And I teach my young nieces, I teach them two sides to that coin. I teach them, number one, I want you to treat everybody with kindness and respect and love. And watch your tongue, because the Bible says it's a very powerful thing. And you might say something that really hurts somebody. But there's another side to that I teach them. And I teach them, when people do it back to you, you've got to learn to throw it over your shoulder. You've got to get strong. Because when you're 80 years old, there's going to be somebody saying something not nice to you. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Jackson, Jesse Jackson, has spent decades, instead of teaching the black community to learn to jump over hurdles, he's tried to remove the hurdle. He's tried to tell everybody else, get the hurdle out of the way. And when you pull all the hurdles out of the way, you have weak people. And so I will teach my nieces, you know, it doesn't matter the color of their skin or their political belief or their religious belief, you treat everybody kind. But I appreciate the times that they're going to go through life when somebody is not going to be so nice to them. Because it's as they learn to deal with that, especially as children in a young age, you know, we talked about under the age of 10, Sidena is 11, and Amelia is 7, and KK, my youngest, Natalia, is 4. And I appreciate the rough times in life. I appreciate the bad things. It's those tough times that make us strong. Shannon Wright and I have had this discussion. Every time she comes on a show, we've had this discussion. This hurdle concept goes to everything. It goes into the welfare system. I'm a firm believer in taking care of people that really need help. But when you give people help that don't need help, you remove their hurdles, you make weak people. Now we've got generations, 3 and 4 generation families that have been dependent on the government. They're not strong enough to stand up on their own 2 feet. Their children aren't. Their grandchildren are not. I don't want to remove all the tough times out of life from everybody's lives. I will not equivocate. I do not want to remove hurdles. I want to encourage people to jump over hurdles. And Wayne, that's what you do. That's what Kay Carl does. Jan Morgan does. That's what C.L. Bryant does. And I over the last few years, really tried to help as much as I could the black activists in the black community, because I care about the black community and I want them to be strong. I don't want them to be weak anymore. I don't want them to be taking the milk of the pablum from the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons who not only want to take away all their hurdles, but want to turn around to the people that they think are abusing them and they blackmail and they set a bad example and they say the most horrendous things. You know, that last week of I did 4 weeks of summer school with my kids. The first week, history was, of course, Frederick Douglass. The second week, we looked at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 in the summer. In the last 2 weeks, we looked at the Civil War as a total. I was so proud last night. My cousin brought up the Civil War, and little Millie goes, "John Brown!" I was so proud of her. But we go back and we learn through our history. I wouldn't erase the bad parts of our life in this great country for anything, because some of those, it's the Civil War, it was slavery that's helped made us the strong nation we are today. Could I go back and wish all those horrific things would have happened? Yes. Frederick Douglass would have never been the strong man he was when he died. Businessman, an author. A great, great man, a great example. His name is still going throughout history because of the hurdles he had to jump. If Frederick Douglass had none of those hurdles, he wouldn't have been Frederick Douglass. William Lloyd Garrison fought a real hard fight, a real hard battle. It was impassioned in him, and he struggled because, you know, he was, you know, I wouldn't call him a pacifist, but he really did not like the idea of violence. He was one of the first people to step up and say, we might have to go to civil war on this. And he fought a long, hard 30-year, 40-year fight behind the abolitionist movement. And it wasn't easy. But wow, the strength of character he had. And you read some of his writings. Back to the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. You know, those guys were sitting in there. They were without electricity and air conditioning, folks. It was hot. And it was not easy. And they had some hard hurdles to jump over. They had some hard topics to talk about. And they had two sides of the coin. And they fought, and they trudged through it, they jumped their hurdles, and we ended up with the greatest living document there ever was besides the Word of God, our Constitution. That 200, almost 250 years today, later, still is protecting us. Even though there are some that would like to just totally get rid of it, we know the other side would. So I appreciate bigotry. I appreciate difficult times. Do I like the bad things in life? No, I don't. But the Word of God doesn't teach us to get rid of those problems. Irma Bombeck wrote a book. Life is not always a bowl of cherries. Sometimes it's a pit. And God designed it that way because he knew as we jumped our hurdles, we'd get stronger. And that's what this is all about. That's what, Jennifer, you made it real clear. That's one of the big problems in Common Core. They want to remove all the hurdles. They want to remove all the hurdles. We're going to have Evan Syett on next Monday on politics and religion. And, boy, go to his website, evansyett.com, and watch his latest video about the news media. That's what it's all about. They want to make everything a level playing field. That is the roots of what our president today, his philosophy is. He doesn't want America to be up here anymore, helping the rest of the world be better. He wants everything to be a level playing field. We talked with Jonathan Barbie here not too long ago about these same concepts. They want to sanitize the whole thing, sanitize us from all of our problems. But when you don't have problems, you have weakness. If you don't have hurdles, you have weakness. And boy, shame on you, Jesse Jackson. Shame on you, Al Sharpton, for not spending the last 30 years telling black America, telling the black young men in this country, jump your hurdles. Yeah, you're going to run into people that are going to be idiots. They're going to call you names. Like Uncle Tom. Oh, that's the other side, isn't it? They're going to call you names. There's bigots all over the place for all kinds of different reasons. You don't have to be black. You bigotry against me because I'm white and I'm a Christian and I'm a conservative. In fact, I think sometimes maybe I think Wayne probably you get more bigotry now that you're a black conservative than you were just the idiots in society that are dumb that were not raised right.
Oh yeah, it's double.
And that's what this is all about. I want to pass it back to you, Wayne, and then we'll go around table again and go back to Rodney and Dan and Stacy and Jennifer and come on back around. Wayne, what say you on that?
Well, I'll say this about Al Sharpton and Messy Jackson. When I found out the lies that these individuals have been pushing over the last 30 years, 35 years, 40 years. Again, it hurt. It hurt so much for a couple days. It felt like my heart was hurt. I mean, my heart was hurting to know that those men, seemingly, who were supposed to be educated and spiritual leaders were telling the black community the opposite of what they should have been. Dr. King always talked about being responsible. That's something that Democrats don't do. Dr. King always told the minorities, don't wait for the government to give you your freedom. You go out and you take your freedom and be responsible. But again, the Democrats don't practice that. And now, sometimes when I talk about Al Sharpton, especially where he is right now, Al Sharpton doesn't understand Dr. Martin Luther King's dream. He never did. And he wasn't old enough. Well, he wasn't old enough to really be an intricate part in the march. So he's been spending the last 30 years trying to catch up. But on the other side, he feels especially with the Tuan Abrolah case, he has tried to redeem himself. And I, like somebody said earlier, how the it seemed like the black community needs leaders. It's not that the black community needs leaders, or seem like they need leaders. It's just that after Dr. Martin Luther King and how great he was and how everybody gravitated toward him, that I think they felt lost without one. You know, everybody was lockstep. Dr. King said, take a right, take a, well, outside of the Black Panthers and the Muslim community, if Dr. King said for the black community to take a right step, they took a right step. Left step, left step. But when you come with Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, they aren't talking about taking any steps except backwards. Dr. Martin Luther King would have never, ever stood for what is going on right now. He would have never settled or allowed Elijah Cummings and whatever his name is. He would never allow them to side with the party that was turning the hoses on the black people in the 60s, in the 50s and 60s. Could you imagine Martin Luther King sitting down, shaking hands, and joining the Democratic Party in the early 70s? The party that had been turning the hoses, agreeing with the segregation. It's hard for me to believe that. But just as soon as Dr. King died, the Democratic Party decided, you know what, we're going to go ahead and give them some status. We're going to make them mayors. We're going to put a couple in the mayorship. And then we will even elect some to Congress. And better yet, we will create the Black Congressional Caucus in the early 70s. We will create that, and whatever problems that you have, you can bring it up to Congress and give it to the Black Congressional Caucus, and they'll take care of it. The problem is all they've done over the last 40 years is name schools after Dr. Martin Luther King and name highways after Malcolm X. They haven't done anything to help the black community. And when you look at them now, you're looking at congressional black leaders with ethics problems that have been in there too long that think that they're still in the 60s. Now, that's a recipe for disaster. You have black leaders that that push racism. How is Chicago racist? Just the word. It's a word. You know, how is food stamp racist? It's a word. You know, but that's how they push it across. They get in the pulpit every Sunday and they preach this. And that's what hurts. That's what hurts. It's because the black community is listening to this junk. And they don't care about politics. They don't care about the end game. They don't care about how things are turning out. Somebody asked me a while back, what's it going to take for the black community to leave the Democratic Party? I'll tell you. The end of the world. They need an end of the world experience, especially in the pocketbook. I don't know if y'all heard or not today, but the Obamacare was pushed out into 2015. Yeah, most of us know what was going to happen January 1st. We knew. And the reason why they pushed it out past the election is because we knew that the Democrats, voters, were going to see such major upgrade in payments that they were going to go off. Talking about losing the House, they probably would have lost the Senate. But they pushed it out past the election to 2015. What is going to change the minority communities these days is they need some type of jolt. That's why I said the end of the world experience. They need some type of jolt to change. Mine was the 2008 election. That's what changed me. Because I wasn't going to let the media for the next 4 years control who I voted for. Sometimes the small things make a change, and then sometimes you need a big thing to make a change. Remember, 50 plus years of being inundated with liberal movies, liberal TV, liberal newspapers, liberal magazines, liberal comic books, liberal education. They put a plan in place to take over this nation. And it's our place. It's our charge. It's our responsibility to turn it back. And that's why it's more personal to me. It's more personal to me because I want to help those change their mindset. You know, I tell people, unless you are from Cambridge, I'm the only person around right now that can say I was born in the middle of Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman. I was born 7 miles away from where Harriet Tubman was born, and I was born 15 to 20 miles away from where Frederick Douglass was born, going the other way, right in the middle. So that's where I get my spirit from, or at least that's what I tell people. That's where I get my spirit from. But I'd like to thank you for allowing me to have some time on tonight. I really appreciate it.
Rodney, we'll pass it to you.
Okay. Hey, you know, I was writing some things down while I was listening to you guys talk, and I absolutely love, thank you for making me a co-host of the show. But, you know, pointing out something, I was thinking back, Scott, you said, you know, you love bigotry because it taught us what we are supposed to be like today and what not to do. And I think back, you know, during my own life, you know, I've gone from six-figure income to homeless living in my car. I'm cool in the middle. I don't have an attitude about it, but I don't expect a free ride. I earned what I have. And, you know, you get these people talking about what people are owed. And I think back to, okay, let's go with that theory. You lost your leg. You're in a wheelchair. You need help. You have a mental retardation or something, and you can't function at 100%. You need help. You have, say, brain trauma, a car accident, something happened, you're in a wheelchair, you've lost a limb. Those are people who need help. When I hear all these racist comments and race baiting, you're owed something because your ancestors were slaves. In the late 1400s, Christopher Columbus discovered America. We were formed as a country in 1776. We had the Civil War to free the slaves, which ended in 1865. Nobody who is alive today experienced slavery. Bigotry and racism, yes, but slavery, no. You know, and I once was used to be a manager of a Journey shoe store. Lady came in, wanted to buy shoes. The machine, you get a check. Back in the days, you get the machine, you put it through your little machine with your check, it says decline. She starts yelling at me that I won't take her check because she's black. Kind of got myself in a little bit of trouble. I looked at her and said, get the hell out of my store. My ancestors are Swedish. We've never actually owned slaves. They were never allowed in Sweden, ever. It said, we just conquered. We're all Vikings. But, you know, get the hell out of my store. You can't tell me that. Yes, I can. Don't tell me the machine sees ones and zeros. Your check is no good. It doesn't know whether you're black, white, blue, or yellow, and I couldn't give a damn. You know, and nobody, the famous phrase, you know, they need help. Well, in all reality, it's just like a driver's license. Nobody owes you a damn thing. do I choose to help you because I'm a kind person or a considerate person, or in the case with some of the nonprofits I work with, because I personally have a company that I've built with money I've earned, and I choose to give back to the community and want to help you. I am not, you are not owed anything, and I don't have to do it. It's my choice to go kiss my you-know-what. I choose to help you. And when they talk about all this, people deserve stuff. People deserve a hand up if they need it. And at some point, I just look at you and go, no, don't call me. You know, my friend right now was telling me the other day that she had her neighbor comes over and needs to borrow $20. Neighbor comes over and needs to borrow $20. Neighbor comes over and wants to borrow $20. Never has any money. Never mentions paying it back. And then comes over and goes, yeah, I took, you know, I went out last night to the bar with some friends and we spent all this money. And she's thinking, excuse me, you owe me money. And she's never mentioning that. She's like, I'm not giving her any more. Good, don't. You don't owe her. She's taking, because she's been taught she can't. And it's just, at some point, my ski coach used to tell us, you know, you talk about hurdles. He'd make us run. We used to have to run in our ski boots up the hill as the first exercise. And end of the day, I was in pain. And I remember one time on the bus, this one kid goes, you guys all suck. He goes, I never fell today. Coach looked at him and goes, if you didn't fall, you didn't try hard enough, and you didn't learn anything. And that has stuck with me my entire life. You want to talk hurdles, I've earned mine. I learned to run up the hill, ski all day, and I fell because I was trying to better myself. And those falls always hurt, but it taught me something. And I told you before about my dad when I was 12 years old. You want a quarter for a candy bar? Go earn it. Nothing's free. And it just, it blows my mind where this came from. And I love Messi Jackson and if you called him. And it's just, nobody owes you anything. If you ask for it, and I believe you're going to do something with it for a good purpose, I have no problem loaning you money or helping you out, but I don't owe it to you. And if you think you deserve it, I'll be the first one to go, yeah, whatever. You know, and that's not racism. I don't care if you're white, Chinese, Korean, African-American, whatever. I was never alive when your ancestors were slaves, and I've never treated you as anything other than a human being. And as a human being, you're not worthy of my going out of my way to help you because you won't do anything better with your life. I now pass it on to Dan.
Thanks, Rodney. Yeah, I agree with you completely. And, you know, if anything happened with me, I spent my life jumping over hurdles. From 3 years old, I was misdiagnosed, I mean third grade, I was misdiagnosed with a learning disability. People constantly told me, you can't do this, you can't do that. And what it did to, for me, even as a, you know, a third grader, it was, these hurdles were placed in front of me, and I took them as being opportunities of succeeding, not failure. And I took each one of these hurdles as they came along, and I can proudly say after a half century on this earth, you know, I've accomplished every goal I set out to do, with one exception. And that was am I still on?
Yeah, you sure are, Dan, but let me throw this in here. We're going to be at the top of the hour in 6 minutes, which means we'll go over. So if you're listening online, between now and 6 minutes from now, you'll want to call in on the guest call-in number, 347-205-9620. In about 6 minutes, Blog Talk will cut us off of the Internet stream, but you can still listen. We can still go past that hour. But you won't be able to hear us on the Internet. So if you're listening right now and want to continue to listen over the top of the hour, call in at 347-205-9620, and you just don't have to press 1, and we will leave you alone. If you want to join and ask a question, you can press 1, and we'll do that. But go ahead and give us a call in, and I'll pass it back to you, Dan. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. And what I was saying is, I had one exception, one goal that I didn't reach. And it was while I decided I was going to try to rekindle my origins and go back to dinghy racing, small boat racing for the Olympics. I needed a, you know, to, because I had left professional sailing, I needed a job, and I thought around and decided I was going to become a commercial pilot. I always liked flying. I always liked the idea of it. It's always intrigued me. Didn't have the money. Had to figure out a way to do it. Volunteered at the Palm Springs Air Museum. Got to meet the right people. And found a guy who was willing to, you know, fund me in return for becoming a co-pilot with his private jet. And go on to a career on that. And I thought, hey, great. Well, I went through flight school, passed my solo, everything. Kept on pushing off my flight physical. And in 2000, my flight physical, they discovered I had 100% blockage in three arteries. And I was destined for death unless I underwent emergency bypass. Well, you know, they don't allow pilots to have bad heart. So there goes that idea. And after a while of pouting and feeling sorry for myself, I grabbed myself by my bootstraps and said I need a new career. Looked around and fell into heavy equipment. I mean, I looked at it, at the obstacle, big deal. Went on, kept on doing that right up to the Depression. And, when my company went out of business, I continued on, you know, looking for work and suffered another heart attack. Didn't let that stop me. Kept on going. And then last year, I suffered a major heart attack. And if anybody, I welcome everybody to go to my homepage and scroll through my blogs. But I was in a coma for 6.5 weeks. I lost 75% of my heart. I have 50% still functioning output. I have 3/4 of an artery left. The other 4 are gone. And I'm told that I am limited to 20 minutes of activity 3 times a week. And that's it. I cannot do anything else. I have no prolonged energy to keep going. But you know something? That didn't stop me either. I don't want people to feel sorry for me. You know, I'm waiting to get on the organ donor list, and, I'm one step above that. But, you know, so be it. And I was forced into disability. I don't like it, but there's no other choice. But you know something? It never stopped my belief in this country, my belief in what I stand for. And you know something? I spend 12 hours a day plus online writing. I post a message every day on my site, on my page. I post it on my own personal site where I have 500 followers that are with me. And I'm reaching out in any way I can to grab fellow Republicans, get them active. You know, if I can do it, 100% disabled and, you know, with a life expectancy of God knows whenever the good Lord calls me back. But you know something, it's definitely limited. And if I can keep on going on with these obstacles in front of me and I can overcome each and every one of them, and God bless, maybe I can be around a while longer so I can do more. But if I can do it, what is everybody else's excuse? Why can't you just get out there? I know Republicans, as a people, we are not inherently aggressive. I hate fighting. I hate having to prove myself all the time. But you know something? It has led to my being quiet and not being more active led to where we are today. Now, I've been involved with Facebook since day one. I've been online and very vocal. I haven't reached enough people. But if anybody wants to look me up, please do, because You know, I'm out here for a reason, not because I like to write and see what I'm putting online. I want to try to reach the people. And I wrote a short post earlier today, yesterday, and it said, I am not a conservative, I am not a liberal, I am an American patriot. And the reason why I wrote that is so many people are getting caught up with parties that they're forgetting what we are trying to do as a people, as a nation, and that is preservation of the Union. That's what I'm here first and foremost. I'm a registered Republican. I'm very proud of that. But I also know that as soon as I talk to anyone on the left and call myself a Republican, the wall that Wayne mentioned goes right up. And I might as well be talking to a wall because I'm not going to get through to them. So I don't reveal that. I call myself a constitutionalist simply because I don't want to turn them off. I don't want that wall. You know, Wayne was talking about, you know, when you start mentioning the race issue and ERA and things like that, all of a sudden that wall goes up. How can we reach the other side with walls between us? So I'm looking at it until we can recreate ourselves as a Republican Party through education, telling people, you know, what we're about. We can't get anywhere. I mean, we need to reestablish that. Show the truth. Speak the truth. When somebody goes against you, say, okay, here's my proof. There it is in concrete. Please offer me some evidence on your side. If they don't, or try to change the subject, you just simply and politely ask them to come back to the original topic. If they want to scream and yell and something like that, you say, well, thank you for your time. I'll see you later. You know, I have a bunch of people on my friends list. And, of course, you know, you're a bad apple in every bunch. You know, you get every once in a while somebody just wants to create problems. I hit block. You know, I can't waste my time with that. I'm not going to get myself aggravated because it's not worth it. I'm not going to change their minds. The only way I can change their minds is by allowing them to change their own. Give them enough evidence, show them enough proof, let them sit back and think about it. Then they'll come over to our side. We have another group in the Republican Party who are, I call them religious Nazis for lack of any other choice. And those are the ones who, you know, try to jam the Bible down people's throats. Well, again, I had to refer back to my webpage, and I know Scott has read it, but I had a near-death experience, you know, and a one-on-one with God. I'm not going to, you know, bring that as saying I'm anything special. But you know something? If nothing else, it made me rethink. And it really reevaluate myself that those arguments I thought I was doing good for the party were not doing any good at all. And approaching people with kindness, sharing love, and showing the peaceful nature of us as a people, then we can get through those barriers. Then we can jump those hurdles, and then they can come to us. Lay the burden of proof on them, not us. We have all the facts, and if they choose to challenge us, we can deliver them. You know, we have to stop arguing. We, you know, abortion comes up, gay rights, all this stuff. We go into battles that nationally cannot be won. And we wonder why we're losing the war. Well, you can't win the war by participating in losing battles. So we have to change our tactics, reorganize, and come in mass and spread the truth. You know, if we do that alone, you know something? And we bring Christ back into our lives and back into the center of this country, abortion will solve itself. Gay rights will solve itself. As our moralities change and we become back, we return to our origins, so many of the issues we face today will disappear. And that's what I'm after. And we have to reevaluate how we're doing this, because you know something, the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I'm sick and I got a headache from running into the wall so many times. So I had to reevaluate, you know, how I'm going to approach this. And you know, it's funny, Wayne, I just mentioned that on my homepage. What you were saying about this is, you know, don't engage in arguments. You know, leave them, if nothing else, saying, wow, what a nice guy. And that's it. You know, if we can do that, we'll win. Stacy, over to you.
Rodney, did you want to jump in with something?
Oh, I was just going to say on Dan's comment, first of all, Dan, dude, oh, my God, what you've gone through is the epitome of the list you just named off. I wouldn't even hold it against you if all you did was whine and complain and expect a free ride. But you never have. You're out there doing it. You know, I get the people whining about things, and you just want to high-five them in the head with a hammer sometimes. We had a security guard this year at our county fair. They hired 11 people, 8 of them. It's a 4-day fair. You were hired through the county's job program because you have no job. 11 people, 4 days, 8-hour days. 8 of them could not make it on time or work a full shift or had 1,000 excuses. Guess what? 3 people got hired. You know, and a pastor once said to me, let them see you by your action. Don't show them your light. Don't tell them about your light. Let them see the light. And Dan, you are the epitome of the guy I would consider to be one of my heroes, with what you've been through, and you do it. And I would work with you and follow you off the end of a cliff, dude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, I actually wanted to touch back on what we were talking about a little bit ago about the 10 and under and how disturbed I am by it. All night tonight, we've talked about how Republicans and conservatives have facts on their side, and you guys know that as a mom, I get to see this Common Core thing very raw and very upfront, and it troubles me when we talk about how susceptible kids are to not just indoctrination, but to learning and soaking in facts and soaking in everything they're taught at a young age, how history books are being rewritten. These things aren't going to be facts for long if we don't put our foot down and stop this education, this sexualized education. It's become an issue where when my daughter comes home with information about how we're destroying the environment, at 8 years old, that's going to stick with her. Jennifer was talking earlier about how Frederick Douglass remembered his childhood and what his mother told him. And it terrifies me that my daughter's learning something in her textbooks that she's going to remember 20 years from now and believe as fact because it's what was taught to her in school. And the amount of parents who are not involved, who are not in touch with what their students are learning, are being taught, these children are being taught lies in the history books. And while we as Republicans and as Republicans and conservatives recognize that we have the facts on our side, what do we do when the facts have been changed and our children taught lies. And by the time they are old enough to, you know, start acting and voting on the knowledge that they have, and they're acting and voting on false information. It's no longer a low information crowd. It's a generation of children who have been raised on lies and on race baiting and on political correctness. And I think that all of this goes back to the importance of just getting Common Core out of the entire nation, because it scares me to sit down and read the information my daughter brings home and think about, for instance, the president coming out with his environmental issues, calling us the Flat Earth Society because we think it's nonsense. We know it's nonsense. Well, my daughter, 20 years from now, learning this in school every single year, to her, it won't be nonsense. I'm here to tell her that it is, but how many other parents are? And it's, I think it's crucial that in order to have another group of us in the next generation, we have to make sure that they're being taught facts, not just at home, but in school. For those of us who can't teach at home, who can't afford private school, we have no option but public schools. It has to start there for the children who, like I said, don't have an option. Jennifer?
I think that you're right. You know, it's live by doing and let your actions speak. We've got to start, you know, reaching the hearts and the minds of citizens around us. We're going to have to not just share the facts with people, but get to the hearts of the American citizen. Because I think the left has done such a really fabulous job with their liberal media propaganda that people just won't believe what you say, because, you know, the conservative Christian is a satanic, you know, Tea Partiers are satanic. You know, you can get into argument with people that will try to tell you that George Wallace was a Republican. You know, and from the South, growing up here in Alabama, I mean, I know that to be totally untrue, you know. But because, you know, grandpa, grandma, and, you know, previous generations have been preaching this stuff like it was the gospel truth, you know. And it's time for us to embrace our heritage. We've got to get back to our core values. And with that, I want to say it's been a wonderful show. Thank you, Wayne Dupree. News Ninja 2012, Liberal Slayer, and blogger, and we have so many great American patriots that are on this show each week. I want to thank everyone, and I'm going to turn it back over to Scott Osborne.
Thank you, Jennifer. And Wayne, the call dropped a little bit ago. I'm not quite sure if he had a problem and couldn't get back in, or if he just had to go. But we really, I am so glad that he called in. I've been wanting to set up a time, actually, for him to be as a guest. I've been following Wayne for a while, and I've watched him grow. And I'll tell you, we need a lot of Wayne Duprees. We really do, and I do. I want to encourage everybody, every one of our listeners that's listened this far, if you're listening in archive or if you're listening right now, go to NewsNinja12.com. Go to his website, check out his videos, check out his writing, check out the articles. You know, he is Andrew Breitbart. He really is, and he fights daily. He was huge in helping with this fight, along with Shannon Wright on the Jared Markham case. You know, I'm out in California. I always say all my friends back east have all the fun, and all I get is this old Blog Talk Radio show. And if there was any way I could have been in Logan, West Virginia, at the end of last week, I would have done it, but I couldn't. But they went, and they got in the car, and they went down there, and they supported Delegate Nelson and Alan and Jared and the family, and stood up, and we won because of it. And Wayne does that. He's in the fight in the trenches. He's not just somebody who all of a sudden come to the conclusion that the ideology that he used to understand was wrong and there was another one that was right. He gets in any fights in the trenches, and I so appreciate him for that. And if you're still listening at some point, Wayne, I just love you, brother. Your work is so important. We got plenty of time, so we really can go around again. We got 45 minutes before Long Talk really cuts us off. We've gotten in a real good habit of going past that second hour, which is fine. You know, there's some people that really try and cut Blog Talk off to 1 hour. I don't understand why we want to do that when Hannity and Rush and Mark Levin, those guys can make it all by themselves almost for 3 hours. And I love the dialogue. You know, I'm with you, Rodney. Rodney and I have been kind of chatting in the background, and we've got a great crowd here. We got a great group. And, you know, we could sit down and look at each one of us and the hurdles that we've had to jump over. None of us are perfect. None of us have gone through life without making mistakes. None of us have gone through life without having difficulties in our lives. But we're all hurdle jumpers. Stacy, you know, my aunt raised my three cousins all by herself. My uncle had some real health issues that really made him kind of a little cuckoo right after they were all born. And she raised a boy who was a year younger than I, my cousin Charlie. And then she had twin girls, and she did it all by herself. And as my sister and I go through life and her husband dealing with these three kids that we've got, I oftentimes think of her and the struggle that it had to be and the strength that she had. And she's just there's not very many people in my life that I don't respect any more than my Aunt Kathy because of that. But she made it through the struggles, and she was a hurdle jumper. And Stacy, you don't have it easy. You don't have it easy. But you don't stop. You keep on keeping on. Jennifer, you're in the same boat. And you've got a boy. You've got a boy getting ready to really be a teenager. And it's been tough now. You just give it another few years. It's going to get tough. And Rodney and Dan, you guys, we all fight this fight. And on top of everything, I'm reminded again the Apostle Paul. You know, he says I've been through all kinds of trials. He says I've been beaten with the 40 lashes minus one 3 times. I've been shipwrecked. I've been in danger from my own countrymen. I've been in danger in sea. I've been in peril. He's been imprisoned. But you look at the Apostle Paul, and when he was in prison with Silas in the book of Acts, what was he doing? Was he sitting around sad? No, they were singing. I often say they were singing, sing and be happy. But he, you know, he had the mentality of taking it and just keeping putting one foot in front of the other and putting one foot in front of the other. But in the end, he says, on top of everything, he says, there's my daily concern for the church. And that kind of reminds us. I mean, one of my big concerns is Christianity in this nation. I've made that very clear. But everything else that we go through in life, all of the struggles we've got, and on top of that, we've got the daily concern for our nation. But we keep fighting, and we keep on keeping on. And it's that fight, and we're not going to give up. We're not going to quit. We're going to keep going on. We have got a great crowd here. I am so happy with our little family. I think we've really been blessed with the ability of each one of us. And like Rodney says, the different places that we come from and the different things in life that we've got. Because that's what makes a difference. That's what makes this show interesting. We're going to make it grow. We're going to make it go further. We're going to do some more promoting. I've been so busy the last couple of months. Things have been hard. I haven't even got to really promote the show as much as I want. But we're going to keep on keeping on. Every Tuesday night, we're going to be here. Every Tuesday night, we're going to keep giving out websites like NewsNinja2012.com. And different sites. We're going to have different guests coming on and talking about Common Core and parental sovereignty and the issues of the day. We're going to keep on keeping on because that's what it's about, because we don't have another choice. We don't have another choice. Rodney's got kids. I got nieces. Dan, I'm sure you got kids. You got grandkids. Stacy, you got kids. Jennifer's got Seth. And their future is vital. Their future that we hand over them in the judicial system is important. The future that we hand over to them, to the ability to go and worship in a church service without being hassled and harangued and being in a mess, is important. The economic system that we hand over is important. The ability to have the states giving the power and not the big government, federal government, telling us everything we're going to do and spying on everything that we do, that's important. Because we still live a pretty good life today, but I really worry about when my nieces are in their 40s. I think about that a lot. As I watch them grow and I watch them learn, especially the last 4 weeks, you know, the Thursday, as we were finishing up and we were doing our final, my oldest niece looked up to me and she says, "Uncle," she says, "I've learned so much more in the last 4 weeks than I ever did in school." And let me tell you, that was the biggest compliment in the whole wide world, because she had an awesome teacher this year. She thrived under him. But she's learning to want to learn so that she can make her future better. Watched each one of them grow and different things and learn to jump hurdles and teaching them about Frederick Douglass and teaching them about Harriet Beecher Stowe and John Brown and William Garrison and everything else. It was kind of funny when one day we were having a test and I asked a question that was supposed to be one of the Abraham. I asked a question that the answer was Abraham Lincoln and Millie she says K. Carl Smith. So I know they're hearing what I'm saying. I know they're hearing what I'm talking about, and they're learning. But I do it because I worry about when they're 40. I'm worried about making sure that they are prepared with the foundational ideologies and the foundational Christian principles, the foundational understanding of the way this great nation works. I wanted to make sure that they know that we've got three branches of government. I want to make sure that they know these important things. You know, Jennifer, I am going to download this week. Remind me, because you know how my brain is. We'll get to next Tuesday and it won't happen. I got to do the same thing. We're going to try and play at the end of the show Red Skelton as he talks about, as he goes through the Pledge of Allegiance. I was supposed to get that downloaded this week and didn't do it. But I want to download the Constitution from Schoolhouse Rock, because you bring it up every week. It's important. What are we going to be like in 40 years? Are the young people in 40 years going to be taught we, the people of the United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union? You know, we've been watching, my youngest favorite show to watch in the morning is Andy Griffith. And one of the episodes we watched last week was Little Opie learning the preamble to the Constitution. And Barney went on all, you should know that. And then Barney had to try and say it from memory, and Andy had to help him all the way through it. But where are we going to be in 40 years? Where's our country going to be? Oh, technology scares me. I love technology. I love holding this iPhone and being able to do what we do with this. Like I said, from the middle of the pool a while ago, I mean, it's a great technology. On Friday, I'm going to sit down at John and Betty's table and put the phone on a glass to elevate it a little bit. I'm going to teach ladies Bible class for 2 hours. We're going to go spend 2 hours talking in the Old Testament, and I can broadcast it. And Michael in Ghana, West Africa, is going to be listening. That's fabulous. I love technology, but where is technology taking us? I worry about those things. But as long as we keep going, as long as we keep on keeping on, as long as we keep jumping our hurdles, as long as we don't stop equivocating, as long as we don't equivocate, you know, I love the word equivocate. That's my new phrase this week. I really love William Lloyd Garrison. The more I read, I just posted on my Facebook a song that he wrote, the Song of the Abolitionist. And I want to take a moment to read it, and then I'll pass this around to us again. But it's all about jumping our hurdles. You know, William Lloyd Garrison, he understood the battle he was in. And he said, And this is to the tune of Auld Lang Syne. I won't sing it for you. But I am an abolitionist. I glory in the name. Though now by slavery's minions hissed and covered o'er with shame. It is a spell of light and power, the watchword of the free, who spurns it in the trial hour. The craven soul is he. I am an abolitionist. Then urge me not to pause, for joyfully I do enlist in freedom's sacred cause. A nobler strife the world ne'er saw than slave to disenthrall. I am a soldier for the war, whatever may befall. I am an abolitionist, oppression's deadly foe. In God's great strength I will resist and lay the monster low. In God's great name do I demand to all be freedom again, that peace and joy may fill the land and songs go up to heaven. I am an abolitionist. No threat shall awe my soul. No perils cause me to desist. No bribes my acts control. We need to send that to Congress, don't we? A freeman will I live and die in sunshine and in shade, and raise my voice for liberty of not on earth afraid. And, you know, I've been saying this all week. I really think if William Lloyd Garrison were here today, he'd probably be just with you, Rodney, and me, and Dan, as we, and I don't know if Jennifer and Stacy have ended up there, but we've all ended up in Facebook prison. And I think William Lloyd Garrison would have probably been booted out of Facebook 4 or 5 times by now. He would have been booted off of Twitter. Because he wouldn't equivocate. He wouldn't mince words. He said it the way it was. He said it plain and clear. And he fought the fight every day because he knew that the fight had to be won. And, you know, Jennifer, you said it. We're sliding back into a slavery. We're sliding back into a time where we'll be controlled at every move if we don't be careful, because technology is making it easier and easier and easier for governments to do that. We have an administration right now that would like to just hand everything over the power. We've got troops from the UN. They're on our soil. That's never happened before. We've got our own military out doing police work. That's totally against our Constitution. We've even got Russian soldiers in training to work things like the Super Bowl and help us in the matters of a natural catastrophe. What in the world is going on? If we don't fight it and we don't beat it back, it's going to be a mess that we're living in 40 years and 50 years. And I don't want to see that. I want to see us continue to be the great nation that we are. I want us to see us to continue to help nations, small nations like Ghana, West Africa, where we spend money and we go down there and we help those poor people and we try and give them a better standard of living. I want us to continue to do that. I want us to continue to have a nation where we can have a system of a safety net for those people that need it. Boy, we live in a society where we've got one side of politics want to turn that safety net into a fishing net. And it's stretching and it's stretching and eventually it's going to break. But like you say, Rodney, the only way to stop that is to get back local. And we got to get back and we've got to change the minds and hearts. And it is not difficult. You know, I've had conversations even recently with people that had no idea about politics. And within about 7 to 10 minutes, I can explain in some very simple words why I am a conservative. Why I know that the way I believe is what got us here where we are at the standard of living we are. We're going to keep fighting the fight. We got to keep doing it. We got to keep supporting great candidates like Joe Carr. I'm going to tell you, go to Joe Carr for Congress, joecarrforcongress.com, and check out some of his videos, or go to my Facebook page and go down. I just put a wonderful video on the Second Amendment. He's a fighter. He believes in sovereignty. He uses the word sovereignty. We're going to win this fight. I firmly believe that. I'm going to pass it back to you, to Rodney. Rodney, just keep on passing it around. Like I said, I think we've dropped Wayne. And by the time we get back around, we should probably be towards the end of the top of the hour, and I will try and play Red Skelton, see if we can hear him. I didn't get it loaded into the system. I should have and just didn't. I'm going to have to take the YouTube video, turn it into an audio file, and then upload the audio file. It's a couple of steps, and I just didn't get it done. I have to apologize to Dan because I was going to do that for this week, for the 4th of July. Because I'll tell you, Red Skelton, when he explains that Constitution, and I would hope that each one of our listeners has heard that at some time. I know I've heard it at least 12 to 15 times in my lifetime over the years. In fact, I think we've got it on DVD around here somewhere in my dad's DVD collection. But we're going to do this. We're going to win this fight. We're going to be here every week. NSA, we would love to welcome you to listen at any time you want. In fact, Barack Obama, if you're listening, great. I'd love for you to hear some of the things that we have to say. You'll realize why you're wrong and why we don't care what color you are. I don't care. In fact, I was actually proud that our country, we elected a man that was black as a president. I just wish we hadn't elected somebody that was inept. I wish we had elected Wayne Dupree or a Kay Carl or a C.L. Bryant or a Herman Cain. We've got somebody that's inept that believes this country should be lowered to the standard of everybody else and share everything to make everybody even. Problem with that is, you know, when you're on the schoolyard, you remove all the teachers from the schoolyard, you have chaos. Pass it back to you, Rodney.
I'm going to just close with very simply, you know, we were talking on between you and I on Facebook, and you mentioned it, you know, our diversity of our group, you know, from 26 years old all the way up to senior citizen type stuff we've got for guests, what got us into politics, how long we've been in politics, what do we do, what are we comfortable doing, you know, and we've talked about this before. A lot of people, you know, they want to know about politics, but they don't understand it or it's not comfortable. And we've gone back to the same phrase. Our country was founded by people who gave up everything from their wealth to their life to forge this country. I guarantee you it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't something, I don't believe Washington, Adams, or anybody else woke up in the morning and went, I want to go to that spot where I'm not comfortable. But they believed in the cause. And we just got to wake up, you know, and you always talk about the work I do out here and the work you do in putting this radio show together. And you've been doing this with us since the Herman Cain campaign. And I just got to say, I'm proud to be on this show with you and helping to try and get this message out there, and to have someone on our show with us, my favorite girl, Jennifer Montrose, is just absolutely amazing because she may be the only person I know that gets less sleep than I do because, like you said before, I've seen her up all hours in the day. Kay Carl, the Frederick Douglass stuff. Now we're trying to bring him out here to California for an event, Scott, and we're working on that. She got me on the phone with Kay Carl the other day, and what an amazing guy. And working with We Bat Mac, and when we had the Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich campaigns, and she's getting no support from anybody and figuring out just do it on her own, didn't complain about it, and you got busloads of people going to rallies in different states or precinct walking, get out the vote efforts, and I doubt it's comfortable for her. It's probably not in the comfort zone she imagined growing up, but she does it. And emulating people like that, just do the job. It's stand up for what you believe in and don't back down because someone might get offended or it's not comfortable. Do it or you lose it. And I pass it to Dan.
Well, thanks, Rodney. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciated what you said earlier. I feel very humbled by that. And I'm just keeping on, keeping on. It's a drive from love of country. You know, I could not sit here. You know, I believe that, you know, when my retirement and I had it all set up to be living down in the Keys, sipping on pina coladas and watching the ocean and sailing. And, you know, now all of a sudden I'm faced with my own mortality. I'm found newfound hope because of Obamacare being pushed out to 2015. But, you know, in all reality, unless I get a heart transplant, you know, 5 years. It's about all I have. So I'm not in this fight for me. By the time it all goes to in a handbag, you know, my days on this earth are going to be gone. But my granddaughters aren't. She'll just be starting her life. And that's why I'm here. You know, if I hope to inspire people to say, if I can do this in my condition, why can't you? And please join in. I'm not trying to make people feel bad for me. I'm not trying to, you know, get people to get angry saying, oh, well, you know, rah, rah, rah. I want people to get involved. Yeah, talking politics is not a fun issue. It's not exactly my favorite topic. But you know something? What is my history. Like Wayne said, you know, growing up between Frederick Douglass, you know, I grew up in where the birthplace of freedom of religion came from, Rhode Island. You know, the state of Roger Williams. You know, the Protestant preacher who stood up against the Puritans and said, I want to practice my religion. So they kicked him out of town. He went, created Providence Plantations. The oldest synagogue in the world was half a mile from where I lived when I lived in Newport. Where John Paul Jones called home when he wasn't at sea was with the town I grew up in, Kingston. This is the birthplace of our nation. You know, in my 20s, I lived in just outside of Boston in Natick. I used to walk around Walden's Pond, you know, go to Concord, Lexington and Concord, the Freedom Trail. I taught sailing across from the USS Constitution. I was immersed in the birth of our nation. And, you know, that's probably what gave me the love for it. And, you know, I couldn't check out of this earth without knowing that my country is safe. Safe from tyranny. Safe from a tyrannical government. I see this happening, and I could not, in all good conscience, sit back and allow that to happen. Not while there's blood flowing through my veins, and not while I still have a voice. You know, a lot of it's been taken away from me, and I'm still going to carry on. And the day I'll stop carrying on is a day when I'm going to be sitting beside God. And until then, I'm going to keep on keeping on. Why? Because of my commitment to this country, my love for this country. And I can't stop, you know. And please, I want everybody to sit back and think of what you have. Think of the gifts you have and think how precious it is. Don't you want to give that to your children? Don't you want your legacy to be that you were part of a movement that saved this country? That's what it's about. It's about my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, who I'll never see. That's what it's about. It's about the future generations, not about me. Heck, out of this whole panel, I'm the oldest one. And, you know, I'm the one that is least involved in parental sovereignty. You know, I've done my child rearing and, you know, now I'm sitting looking at my grandchildren, and I have a very comfortable life that I could just turn my back on this and no problem. But you know something? I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. So that's why I'm here. And, you know, people like you, Rodney, yes, you inspire me as well, because, you know, we all had to fight. We've all fallen on our butts. I was homeless too. You know, I had to shovel horse poop one time to keep a roof over my house. You know, I don't even know anything about horses. But you know something? I got the position and I did what I had to do. I kept on keeping on. You know, and I took it as a life lesson and said, well, that wasn't fun. and moved on. I didn't cry about it. I didn't ask the government for help. I moved on. You know something? The beauty behind this country is, and it starts with the community. You know, in the old days, you know, when somebody, your neighbor needed help, everybody would join together and have a barn raising party. And then they would get it done, and they'd have a celebration, and everybody would be together. We helped each other. We never looked towards the government for help. And you know something? We need to return to that. How many people don't even know their neighbors today? Other than maybe a wave. That's a shame. We need to start at home and build. We need to regain our moralities and build on that. Then maybe, you know something, we can have it. We can have the land of the free. We can be back on top of that golden pyramid. And, you know, that's all I have to say. And, you know, God bless America, and Stacey, over to you.
Thanks, Dan. I do admire you, and I wish I could say something more than ditto to what Rodney said, but he nailed it. And I don't pretend in any way to understand what things are like for you, but I do understand, in a sense, the idea of, if I can do this, what is your excuse? I'm also like you, and I don't look for sympathy, and that sometimes puts me in the position where I'm really uncomfortable with talking about my situation. I'm a single mom of three, and their dad is active duty military, so he's out of the picture. And I am a PTO member. I have a full-time job in statistics and then some. I'm a college student. I'm a soccer mom, except really I'm a baseball mom, a football mom. I'm on the cheer board. I'm the media director of Republican Women. I do all these things, and people look at me and their mouths drop, and they go, "How do you do it?" And I say, "How do I not?" Everything I do, I take my kids with me. I go to Republican Women's meetings and put my kids beside me because they are the reason we're fighting. Everybody stands up and says, "We're doing this for our kids," but I don't have time to do it because I have kids. To me, it's not an excuse. Being in a place where things are too busy and you don't have time to be involved in politics seems ridiculous to me when literally the Constitution is at stake. Literally, tyranny is coming down on us. And I'm like you, Scott, what is this going to look like in 40 years? What is it going to look like in 10 years if we don't make it stop now? And so I think from my age to yours, Dan, it's crucial that we explain to people who we're able to reach why it's so important that they get involved and care, because the time when they're forced to care, it'll be too late. And I do not want to have to say I told you so, because I don't want to have to see that day. And I say every week, the freer we are as a nation, the more opportunities we have to spread the gospel, and the more opportunities we have to prosper financially and to grow our families and to pursue happiness. And that's what I want for my children. And to me, I see it as a responsibility as an American, even at 28 and barely making enough to buy groceries every week. This is one of the most important things we do, is share the message of conservatism, and not just what we believe, but why we believe it and why it's so important that we fight. Really great show tonight, guys. Thank you so much. Scott?
It was a great show. And Jennifer, are you still there? Did you want to give some closing remarks?
I think Jennifer popped off.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and give closing remarks. She said I had to go, and then in the chat, and then I walked away, and I looked over there. She's still online, so Jennifer, go ahead.
I was going to tell you, I am appalled at what has happened in Texas today. And this is breaking news for those on the show tonight that may not have heard about this.
But as pro-lifers are standing outside the Texas Capitol and they're singing Amazing Grace, and Heavenly Father, please forgive me for the words I'm about to use, but I'm just quoting what was chanted today. Pro-choicers standing around, holding their signs, chanting over and over again the words, Hail Satan. And it was reported, videotape of this, by a blogger in Texas. And you can Google this, whatever you want to do. It's Hail Satan supporter, abortion supporters troll pro-life outside Texas Capitol. And what is our nation coming to? What is our nation coming to? You know, we're fighting a battle that is bigger than I think we ever have imagined. And we have got to wake up. You know, I don't see how, you know, people treat this so lightly. I mean, you know, we've got babies, more babies being aborted, being murdered in the state of New York than are being born. The statistics show that. And we cannot deny the obvious. I am so appalled at this. And I pray to my Jesus that this be stopped yesterday. And, you know, I think back as a mother to that day when I had my son. And I see now, you know, even the pictures of and the videos that I've seen of children that were born at 22 weeks that are alive today, that have the ability to go to school every day. But yet in Texas, there are people that are fighting for a child's right to live. And there are people out there chanting this garbage. You know, and it's appalling to me. And I think that we as Americans need to stand up for the rights of the babies who do not have a voice or a choice. And don't get it twisted, because we're just saying that we want to allow that life that's inside the womb to have the right, you know, to live. And you know, and if you lay down, you know, because you were irresponsible, you know, then we do have, you know, adoption that's available. And the genocide has got to stop. And, you know, there's just so much that's going on with Planned Parenthood and the government funding of that. I am so angry that, you know, that they're teaching 10-year-olds with videotapes of things that I would never expose my child to at the age of 10. And, you know, I don't even like to talk about it on the air but, you know, it's so appalling to me. You know, but if we can promote promiscuity, you know, and divide, you know, the sanctity of marriage and all that stuff, you know, where are we going to? It's time that we, I pray a special prayer for this March on Washington on the 15th, that something really dramatic and drastic takes place, that America finally begins to see that what the liberal left have been, propaganda, media, and all that stuff has been out there, is a bogus lie. It's got to stop. And we as Americans have to say, just like those people that were in that little church that prayed and prayed and prayed that the British would sink their ships, you know, the Boston Tea Party, that the day would come that God Almighty would rise again and be ruler over this nation. That is my prayer. That is my prayer, and that is my cry, that the children have a voice.
that finally we get Roe versus Wade overturned and that big government becomes nothing and that we the people get a chance to take back what is rightfully ours.
Amen, Jennifer. And
thank
and
you.
We've come to about the top of the hour. And what a
hey,
great
Scott.
Show. Yeah, go ahead, Rodney.
Hey, Scott, you know, I want to make the comment, Jennifer, you know, you talk about how disgusting it is that they're chanting Hail Satan. Here's a scary one for you. That's even more disgusting. I'll bet you $100 out of my pocket cash, half those people that are standing there saying Hail Satan are going to be sitting in church on Sunday. They're interested in winning, and they're vitriol, and they're violent, and they're vicious. But I got $100 says that about half of them are going to go to church on Sunday and act like they're God-fearing Christians, and that is what really scares me.
Oh, exactly. Exactly, Rodney. And I'm glad you said that, because I was going to go into my diatribe again as we close. I'm having a hard time getting Red Skelton to load far enough. My internet's really bad, and I don't think it's going to play through, so we'll just go ahead and load that up for next week. But it's three-pronged, folks. It's got to start in the churches on these moral issues. It's got to start right there. We're not doing our job in the churches. We've turned our churches into great big institutions of entertainment. And I love entertainment. I love entertainment entirely. But we've thrown away the spiritualism. We've thrown away the biblical teaching. We've thrown away the standing up for what's right. And I think you're right, Rodney. I think a bunch of those people, because we know there's people in the churches all over that have absolutely no problem with abortion whatsoever. Got to go. It's got to get back into our judicial system. I know Rodney's in contact with Sheriff D'Angelo. I can't even say his name. If I'm not looking at it, D'Agostino. He's going to be a future, D'Agostino. That's it. And he's going to be a future guest for us. We've got some great law enforcement like him that are standing up for what is right, and then we've got a bunch of idiots like are in Hurley, Wisconsin, a sheriff in Hurley, Wisconsin that can steal $40,000 from the community and then stand up and say, I didn't know it was wrong. In our politics, in our politicians, we've got a bunch of politicians. Look at Wiener in New York City has got support behind him, and he's an idiot. He's an absolute idiot. Has absolutely no moral scruples whatsoever. We've come a long way, but we're going in the wrong direction. Like I said, we're going to just keep on keeping on. We're going to keep on fighting. We're going to use Blog Talk Radio as a big tool in that. And we use Facebook in order to help promote the show. We use Twitter, and we're going to use even in more different ways. But we're going to continue to do this weekly blog. And I just got done listening right before the show. In the background, I listened as much as I could. I was dealing with a situation here in the family. But to Women Patriots, and Evan Syette was on there as a guest. He's going to be a guest here on this next Monday. Blog Talk on Conservative Nation Radio, they do a great job. Michael really works on making it sound like a real radio program. I don't try for that. I love listening to his. I like our format here. I tell each one of the guests that I've ever had on Blog Talk, I want you to think of it as sitting around on the couches in your living room having a conversation. And that's what we've done tonight, folks. We've had another great conversation. We're in Florida, California, Alabama. We're spread all over the country. It would be 2 days from now, if no matter what we did, if Rodney and I decided we were going to go back and meet everybody in Alabama, if Dan went, he's a little bit closer to come up to from Florida to Alabama, but we could sit around doing this like we're sitting in each other's living rooms, and it's great, and we're going to keep on keeping on. We're going to keep on keeping on because it's important. If you've been listening this far, and you're an archive, or if you're listening on the phone, We've got some great shows on Contending for Truth Radio, like I mentioned, politics and religion. Don't tell me I can't mix them. Evan Syett and I are going to have a dialogue this next Monday. We're going to talk about his new book that's coming out. I want to tell you, Andrew Breitbart said it. His speech a few years back to the Heritage Foundation is one of the greatest all-time speeches. Evan Syett, if he were back in the time of the Founding Fathers, he would have been a Founding Father. Boy, can he message, and I can't wait for that. I listened to him tonight. I've listened to him for the last few weeks, getting prepared. On Tuesday, of course, every Tuesday at the same time, this show, Parental Sovereignty Radio, because it's important. On Thursday, Free Don Miller, Free Don Miller, Free Don Miller. If you want to hear a case, all the things that we've talked about tonight, but applied to the judicial system there in Hurley, Wisconsin, which is absolutely insanity, folks. So listen to Free Don Miller on Thursday nights. And then I just have to say my all-time favorite is Fridays, sitting around Betty Milwee's table, and discussing the Old Testament and teaching the Old Testament. We're just walking through. So join us on each one of those. You know, we're sitting at almost July 3rd. Tomorrow will be July 3rd, and Thursday will be July 4th. Happy birthday, America. Happy birthday. You know, this is a great country. I've had so many conversations over the years where when I'm talking to a liberal and I see this great nation and they turn around and look at me and say, this isn't a great nation. Yes, it is. It is a great nation. Just like each one of us as individuals has made mistakes. Jennifer's made mistakes. Stacey's made mistakes. Dan's made mistakes. Rodney's made mistakes. And Scott's made mistakes. Probably some of the biggest mistakes ever. Our country, it's made some great mistakes, but I guarantee you the wonderful things that it's done for this world and this nation and the people that it's raised and the greatest generation that we're starting to watch slowly but surely we're losing them, and the times that we've had, wow, some of our history. You know, we talked about just a fraction with Frederick Douglass and William Garrison. Study your history. We've got a great history and some great men. Read it. If you want a real good book to read, go out and get James Collier's The Summer of 1787 about that Constitutional Convention and coming together and writing that Constitution. A great, great author, great book. Read about some of those characters. Washington and Madison and Hamilton and many others gathering together in that room, wanting to make a great nation. Folks, this is for Contending for Truth Radio. Happy birthday, America. I wish I had loaded the Star Spangled Banner. I probably should have. I might do that for Thursday for the Free Don Miller show. But we're gonna sign off with Keep On Keeping On. A great patriot and a friend of mine, D-Rock Country. Some of the greatest lyrics I've ever read, D-Rock wrote, and including these. Keep on keeping on. Thank you much, everybody. Join us again next week on Contending for Truth Radio. This is Parental Sovereignty Radio. Have a great time.
Days that just go on, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes down. Keep on keeping on. Live or don't kill.